You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the RHAP B&B for the finale of Survivor Island of the Idols. My name is Mike Bloom, back eastward after a whirlwind few days on the West Coast with Rob Cesternino attending said finale. I'm sure we have so much to talk about with both the finale and my in-person experience, but let me bring in our guests to break down the finale and this season in general, and perhaps look a bit forward to what's to come with Survivor in 2020. First, my ride or die, Liana Boris. Liana, how are you?
Yeah, Mike, my man, what is good? I am just here for the bold, zesty, healthy podcast that this is going to be. Very much excited.
We are the opposite of healthy in terms of podcasts. We are just like the greasiest bag of potato chips you can find on the boardwalk.
Yeah, exactly. Like hangover food, check.
And I'm so excited. Oh, I'm sorry. I went off thought here. Pretty Eric Stein is stretching down the studio, and I just got so distracted. I'm so sorry. Eric, welcome to the B&B. How you doing?
Guys, thanks so much for having me. Never has my catchphrase been so apt. One huge oof for this season of Survivor.
Oh boy. Well, yeah, I think the reaction of the season has been oof, especially due to, you know, certain things and behaviors that happen over the course of the season. I have certainly made my thoughts on the finale prominent in the long podcast that Rob and I did the day after the finale. If you guys haven't checked that out, you can. I'm sure I'll be repeating my thoughts as well on the podcast, because I'm not that original of a person. But I would just love to defer the floor to both of you to start to get your thoughts on the finale, because I can only imagine, obviously, my experience in the room and talking with the cast afterwards was probably very different than, you know, what you guys experience at home. I've heard actually pretty mixed opinions about the finale, between it being, you know, a lot of fun and maybe a more predictable way to end what has been a very weird season of Survivor. Liana, what did you think about the finale, about how everything closed up here?
Yeah, so, you know, it's really interesting when I sort of started thinking about, like, oh, what are my big picture holistic views on the season and on this finale? And because when I rewatched, and I was sort of out of the mindset of, oh, what are my expectations considering the Dan and Kelly situation? I was like, oh, yeah, this is a lot of fun. This is really silly. There's a lot of Dean, a lot of Nora. That is going to be, you know, obviously a recipe for just entertainment. And so if you sort of remove all of the seriousness, like, I thought it was a ton of fun, but at the same time, there's still the heaviness that comes with it. And I know you and Rob talked about this, like, oh, well, Dan was removed, and so now we can sort of enjoy this. It still was a little rough for me. But all in all, like, this is a fun season with fun characters, but it just can't be fun because of everything that we dealt with. So it's a mixed bag for me, for sure.
Totally understandable. Now, Eric, I'm super intrigued to get your opinions, not just because you're a great guest, but also because, you know, you are someone who has a lot of experience as well behind the scenes of reality TV. And it's been a very interesting week, even leading up to this finale, of lots of rumors happening about what may have happened behind the scenes. Of course, CBS and Survivor came out with an official statement the day before as well. Jeff sort of outlined it loosely during his talk with Kelly as well. And I'm sure that really ties into your thoughts about the season overall, and I guess sort of your own thoughts as to how the situations that happened on the island could have been handled, either for the better or for the worse.
Yeah, the whole thing was honestly a mess, but I'll describe it this way. I really love cheeseburgers, right? I do not like salad at all. This was like a really overcooked, dry, on a terrible bun cheeseburger. I still like cheeseburgers more than I like salad, but this was one bad cheeseburger, if that makes any sense. You know, I still love Survivor. I love watching Survivor. I love immersing myself in it. This was about as dreary as it gets for me. And I think, honestly, there was a chain reaction of events surrounding, of course, the cloud that's hanging over the whole thing, but even the way that it affected not only the viewing, but the way that the show was put together. Mm. And I think that they were trying to clean up their own mess for the entire season, and we just didn't know it yet at the time. And I think if you think about it, there was a ton of time spent early in the season on the strong female characters, which we loved and we stand and we wanted one of them to win. And then one by one, Kelly and Missy and Elizabeth all left the game under awkward circumstances, but also were no longer winners. And then Elaine really didn't get all that close to winning either. And then you have the bland, you know, in the right age bracket, vanilla or ginger, as it were, white guy winning the season. And I feel like we spent so much time building up these characters in the pre-merge and right at the beginning of the merge that it felt like the final five were extremely under-edited. I had no sense of their strategic chops. As far as we knew, Dean and Nora were barely in an alliance even. And I think that it made the whole story of the season very difficult to follow. If I'm going to sort of guess further why this may be the case, and I hate to be the one to say it, but my guess is Dan was a much more central figure to this season than we saw, because they didn't want to focus on him.
And I totally agree. I know when I talked with Elaine last week and she's like, you know, if Karishma had told me about her idol, we could have made a play for the big three. And we thought it was just Lauren and Tommy, but she included Dan in there as well. So, yeah, even though I think it may be part of the reason why he might have been in a higher position is because he was also one of these quote unquote goats that was part of the army. I think Dan seemed to be really well ensconced in, you know, that Tommy and Lauren and possible Janet majority, that I think he did play a pretty large role in the decision making that ultimately happened.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting to think about, of like, oh, okay, well, what is the story that was being told this season? Because, you know, usually you get some sort of cohesive narrative. And if you're constantly trying to deal with, like, how do we handle this situation? And each week, it feels like week to week, you're trying to, I don't know, handle it differently, then you can't put together something cohesive. You can't put together sort of a larger story. And Eric, to your point about like the sort of like under editedness, the Tommy stuff. So Heather tweeted during the Survivor finale, the like, butterfly meme where the guy's like, oh, is this a thing? And he's like holding his hand up for the button. And it was like the Survivor editor is Tommy being colorblind. Is this character development? Because it was like, I don't know who Tommy is. Like, I don't really know anything about him. And so that like was very challenging.
Right. And it just didn't also seem what was the opposition and what were these signature moves? We were fed a story, or at least were able to talk ourselves into the story, that Tommy and Lauren dominated the strategic moves of the season. Except if we actually go back, we can think of two or three specific instances that Tommy was completely dead to rights in the game and could have been easily taken out if people weren't playing terribly. So I want to know, what are the signature parts of their game? And I know when asked this in the post interviews, Lauren said, my whole game was the signature part of my game. And that's very nice and all, but what did you guys actually do strategically in the game that made you controlling the whole game, so to speak?
Let me throw something out here. And I've been talking about this a bit behind the scenes with Colin Stone, and I forgot to mention it with Rob amidst all the stuff we were going through. But I think, in a way, Island of the Idols, to your point, Eric, is the modern day Survivor Gabon, where I think you look at the story of that season and it's extremely confusing, right? It's this idea I've sort of coined it the train wreck season, where, okay, here are all these bigger players and you're following their narratives, and then they go out before the finale and you're wondering, where the hell do we go from here? And that's what I felt the story of this was. It's really this weird idea of, well, the people who succeeded were the ones who didn't stick out too much, ironically enough, where, you know, in a row, we had people like Missy and Karishma and Elaine and Janet and Lauren all go because they were considered threats in some regard. And the top two finishers were people who nobody was really counting out, or people were counting out because, well, they're not really great in any regard, so we can take care of them later. That being said, it's a weird narrative to get across when you're trying to really build a satisfying conclusion for your winner. And that's why also I think a lot of people balked at the end of Survivor Gabon as well, is because they said, like, what the hell is this final three? I think you could argue maybe something like Survivor Samuel and Del Sor is another good example of that, where, yes, Natalie Anderson had a good late game push. But I remember at the time, I think Rob himself said this is the least strategic final five that we've ever had. I personally have a softer spot in my heart than most, I think, for these train wreck seasons. But I do understand your point that if you're looking for a cohesive strategic narrative as to what this player did all season long, I have to go back and rewatch the season. But I feel like that's not what they were going for this season, and it may have suffered as a result.
Yeah, sorry, I'm just thinking about the comparisons. I think that's actually pretty apt, because if you know, how do you design or edit a story around somebody who is, you know, not the character that jumps off the screen? You know, it feels like you're definitely trying to force it. And so it's like, well, it's fine. Like, we'll just shove Tommy in, like, in these different bits and bobs, and then that'll make sense, right? Like, we're going to focus around the strong female characters that we're seeing instead, which, again, like, you know, your guys's discussion about the I Was Born at Night, but Not Last Night conversation about why that was included. Like, I think that also just adds to the confusion of, okay, so I'm sorry, what was the point of this all again?
And I think the point was, unfortunately, that they knew that this was going to be a bad look for them this season, so that therefore, like, after the fact, they went to build up and try and say, no, this is the season of strong female characters because we know what's coming. But then that would be rewarding. So if Janet won, if Karishma won, if Elaine won, if Missy and Elizabeth had just wiped the floor with them, if Kelly had done great, that would be extremely rewarding after what we all experience. But Tommy winning after all of this without really understanding how we got there, to me, less rewarding. And if you go through the whole season, tons of botched idol plays, tons of illogical decisions, and why are we getting this person out when we did? It really just, quite frankly, feels like the quality of gameplay was very subpar overall on the season. And I'm sure they don't feel that way, and I'm sure that they think that there's reasons for it. It just turned into one of those seasons where if you were even a perceived threat, let alone actually playing well, you went home. The people that were left, they picked up the pieces. I mean, thankfully, all we can say is now we can finally talk about how we will not have to go through this coming up in 6-7 weeks. So thank goodness for that.
Well, I think it was, we even had this conversation in the preseason episode where it was like, this cast, they're going to play hard. Are they going to play well? I don't know, but they're definitely going to play hard. And so that's what we saw.
Yeah. And it was interesting having that conversation. I mean, that was framed in me watching the first boot where I was like, okay, I don't know why Ronnie went here. This was interesting. I'm not quite sure if it was the right decision. And I feel like that's a good microcosm of, yeah. And I spoke about this during the merge episode as well, that I think, unfortunately, one of the reasons why Missy and Elizabeth did what they did is that it's the other edge of that blade of what happens when you are a super hardcore gamer and you have your head fully immersed in the game. Is in that case, sometimes you don't pick your head up and see maybe the more real world ramifications and the optics of what you're doing. But in this case, it's also, like you said, Eric, I think this cast was very trigger happy. It was like, well, threat, bang, take him out.
Yeah, to that point, though, Mike, and I think, listen, as a viewer, I'm watching that all go down and I'm watching what they chose to do and how they handled that situation there. And my skin was crawling just like everybody else's. I felt sick to my stomach, and I did not in no way supported what they did. However, I will say, and this is not to defend the action, it's just to put myself into their shoes. I actually faced a similar situation like that back when I played Big Brother, you know, when I rode my dinosaur to the Big Brother house back in the day. And there was a situation that would never fly in 2019. There was a cast member who was in his 40s who was basically harassing a 23-year-old woman at the time, was absolutely vile to her. It wasn't sexual nature. It wasn't touching, but it was definitely unwanted and inappropriate. And in my real life, I would have told this man to F off. There's no doubt about it. I would have stood up for her, said that we don't accept this around here. In the game, although I did not aggressively use it to my benefit, I just didn't get involved really in any way whatsoever, because I was playing for $500,000 that I needed and wanted very badly. And it's interesting because it made me reevaluate sort of my own boundaries about where game and real life meet. And that is why what Janet did is so special and truly heroic in this situation, because I think what they did, they took it way too far in the wrong direction, but she took it way far in the correct direction. And it's funny because I always thought if I went back, at least in a game sense, I would be happy to assassinate anyone's game character, would have no boundaries, would be totally happy to lie and leave people, you know, looking bad in the situation. And I don't feel that way anymore. So it was an interesting for someone who has played one of these games to sit here and feel, you know what? It's very easy from the outside as a viewer to dissect and say, man, this was nasty, because it was. At the same time, to your point, as a hardcore gamer who's there to win, they took an opportunity and they seized it. I don't think ever in a million years were the two of them thinking about the ramifications of what they were doing in that moment. They were just putting their head down and playing. And I think it just really got away from them.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, on that note, actually, before we, you know, get further into this finale, I do want to ask you, because as I mentioned before, CBS and Survivor came out with this statement the day before the finale that outlined, you know, the very specific rules that they're going to be adding moving forward, which includes, you know, having a third party on site for anybody, cast or crew, to refer to if they at all feel uncomfortable. I think they essentially instituted like a zero tolerance policy when it comes to contestants, either with harassment or inappropriate behavior. They talked about having, you know, hiring another psychologist to be on set in case contestants want to talk to them about any sort of issues they may feel with being uncomfortable. The interesting thing about that, amongst a number of things, was that the final sentence, I believe, said, you know, we are planning to not only institute this for Survivor, but other CBS shows. And I don't want to go too far down the Big Brother rabbit hole, but Eric, I would be really intrigued to hear from you, again, as someone who was a previous contestant, and especially as someone who has sort of watched modern Big Brother and some of the other TMZ-laden controversies that have come up. Do you think that these stipulations are going to really, you know, segue into the Big Brother house? And if so, will that affect the way that certain things will be either perceived or received?
Well, that might be their opportunity to finally get Amazing Race on, because the season of Big Brother will be about 3 weeks after they remove 75% of the cast. So.
Exactly. Well, Julie comes on like, okay, so we're starting over fresh. We had to remove 16 people from the house in the first 3 weeks, and we're going to start all over again. BB 22.5.
Right. It's like, I need to speak to the following people in the diary room.
Exactly. Oh, no. You know what? Let's just put in the diary room the people that weren't committing this behavior. That might just be easiest.
Yeah. And then Julie comes over the loudspeakers and can talk to everybody else.
Yeah. Robot Sam, you are the winner. The end.
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh. It's like, no, it's fine. I'll just stay a robot the entire season. Like, I don't want to go back in the house.
I think one of the things that was actually just so weird about this season is that it had this heaviness and this seriousness, but then the best elements were just the ridiculous parts. The Dean and Nora of the finale was fun. The Karishma's bizarre excitement over the most mundane things was fun. I mean, even the giant heads, they were fun. But that, I think, is actually what the problem was. There was a tonal imbalance. On the one hand, we were watching this weird buddy sitcom between Rob and Sandra, which, by the way, and this is a total non sequitur, but Jeff embarrassed himself when he said, boy, I sure wish you guys would play Survivor again someday. Brutal. But anyway, I think that's the problem is that, you know what? I think they were feeding us two completely separate shows. It was this like corny, hokey, waka waka, funny sitcom version of the show, which is also kind of a new tone for Survivor. And then it was juxtaposed with this cloud that's hanging over the whole thing. So it just made it a very uncomfortable watch. It's like you didn't know how to even react to any of this anymore when all was said and done. And I will say, Nora and Dean, they did a lot of heavy lifting at the end to try and get it over the top. Although I couldn't help but sit and watch their antics and think, man, this is so fun. But also, how are the two of them in the final three? What did they do here? You know, it's just the weirdest season.
Yeah, why is Detective Dean here with his shoes? Like, I genuinely don't understand.
Okay, well, I'm glad he got him back. He wore them to the final tribal council, which is good. I'm glad he was able to acquire them again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so curious as to why he did not say DK Chillin in the first several episodes, and then he said it 150 times in the final episode. What kind of editing is this?
Yeah, exactly. Talk about tonal imbalance. No DK Chillin in the first episodes. Now nothing but DK Chillin. And like no explanation either. Just like all of a sudden it was like, oh yeah, of course, DK Chillin. Dean, we've known this whole season.
Right. Never even said what his last name was or who, what Chillin. Like, there's no explanation. It's just like, of course. Yeah. The guy, you know, everyone knows DK Chillin. Yeah, and I will say also for the, you know, people that think it's best to only cast super fans. Well, Nora shows why recruits are on the show, right? Mm-hmm. Because they don't exactly know what's going on. March to the beat of their own drum, go wild and crazy. And it's fun to see people figuring it out as they go. And I think to the point I heard you guys kind of discussing on some of these wrap up podcasts is that Nora will be great fun the second time around because she gets the game now. She was learning on the job. She was having fun with herself. I loved it. I thought the two of them, well, it's for the viewers, came really kind of, you know, on strong at the end, particularly Dean. You have to assume Dean was behaving the same way the entire season, right? And they knew he was in the final three. So why didn't we see this Dean in the first 10 episodes? Just very strange to me, the whole thing.
Well, the interesting thing is, from the sense that I got, is I actually feel like purpling Dean the first couple episodes was appropriate, given from what I heard. And I think what he even admitted, like, he was not talking at all at camp, really, until he suggested and opened his mouth. And the very first thing we heard from Dean in episode three was, yeah, let's split the votes, everyone else besides Vince, which means that I'm essentially saying, let's vote for one other person to go home if Vince plays an idol. So I actually think it's a, well, maybe from an entire story perspective, it's not great in terms of really giving him a viable chance of winning, especially against someone like Tommy, who we've heard from the entire season. It's almost appropriate to Dean's game, where we heard nothing from him in the beginning and heard so much from him at the end, because everyone else on the island didn't hear from him until in the beginning and heard nothing from him until the end. So it's weirdly like apropos. Yeah, I'm so mixed here, because I'll admit there are moments from this season that I would much rather watch than I would say like the entirety of a season like Ghost Island or Game Changers, you know. But at the same time, it's, if you balance that against a lot of the awkwardness and heaviness and mishandling of things, you know, does it balance itself out? And it's tough. Maybe this is more of a season to watch like YouTube videos of the best of clips, you know?
Yes. Oh, 100%. So like, spoiler alert, I went and rewatched all of the Edge of Extinction or Island of the Idols lessons. So fun. So fun. So many funny moments, like really, really enjoyable. And then it was like, ah, yes. So clips of this would probably be better, like you suggested, Mike, because I think there are some really funny gems throughout the season. But it's just so hard when you don't have, one, the cohesive narrative that goes throughout the season, and two, you have essentially the cloud that hangs over this whole season. So it's very difficult to enjoy holistically.
I also think that it's a case where, and I think individually, a lot of great characters, and every single person who's run across this cast said they're in great spirits. They're a lot of fun. So many excellent people with excellent stories in this cast. But the fact of the matter is, even a dull season like a Ghost Island, they had so many more characters I'd rather see play again. And let alone, say, David versus Goliath or something of that of recent seasons. I mean, it's tough for me because they did not pop in the way that I think that they could have. And it's just sort of the way that the action unfolds sometimes. It's just one of those weird things. I mean, you know, the first time we saw Kelly Wentworth, it really didn't pop off the TV in any dynamic way, but we knew she had it in her. And I think that there's a lot of people in this cast that could have that as a encore performance, so to speak, but it really just didn't come through for me this time around. But I will say, you know, if you're looking for bright spots, at least in this finale, no one came back after only playing 12 days to win the game. So, you know, it's a step in the right direction from last season.
Yeah, there's a really fun moment where Nora and Tommy's like, we made it 39 days without being voted out. And I was like, yeah, I mean, that's like a very, you know, blasé statement, but it actually like could be a point used to compare yourself against Chris Underwood if we're comparing Survivor winners in 2019. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's when Tommy meets him, like they have a showdown. He's like, Chris is like, well, I won all these things in like the last 3 days. And Tommy's like, well, I just stayed the whole time. So take that.
Yeah, that's the ultimate drop the mic moment. Well, let's get into some of these characters that Eric was speaking about. And, you know, I don't know how in-depth Liana and I want to go into our preseason predictions, but I think, you know, I'd certainly like to get your thoughts, Liana, because I would also say this was a very unconventional Final Five in a number of ways in that, spoiler alert, I definitely thought a few of them would not be making the finale. In fact, one of them might not have even made the merge. And I don't think people would have expected these five to have made the Final Five before the season started. But let's start with Mama Janet, the one of the patron saints of this season, came out to a rollicking ovation and $100,000 from Sia to boot. How did you think that Janet was going to do?
Yes, I freaking love Janet. And I'm so happy that I was so wrong about this prediction. So I had her pre-jury, didn't even make the merge. She had said that she would be a vegetable soup. That was her answer. And my my preseason prediction for her was, if a soup could be voted out of the soup bar, the first choice would be vegetable soup. And much like her soul soup, Janet was the first boot for Vokai. She worked all the time, which for some reason annoyed everybody else. And the chili twosome pulled together all the other random soup people to send Janet on the pre-jury trip. Honestly, Janet probably had more fun on the pre-jury trip swimming every day than playing the game. Like, I reread this and was like, oh, thank God that I was wrong. Because the joy that Janet gave, just amazing.
Well, it's interesting because I also had her going pre-jury, but for a very different reason. Because I honestly, just based on unfortunate stereotypes alone, probably would have gone with a very similar prediction as you had I not seen those first few days where I'd heard like Janet made fire without Flint. I saw the immunity challenge where Janet like throws the grappling hook and hooks it in one go. And I'm like, okay, so she could definitely buck the trend of the older woman. But I actually thought that Janet was going to be like our swap screwed Rob G. Otis of the season, where she got swapped into like a Vokai minority on like Lyra or something. And they say like, well, she's the heart of Vokai, so we're going to take her out. So it's almost like, I don't know, combine, I guess, like Chelsea and Tom Laidlaw in terms of their ultimate demises, where, you know, basically like she would still have these really warm connections with people, but she would get screwed due to, you know, no fault of her own. Which you could argue ended up happening because of the stupid coin flip.
Ah, yes. The coin flip heard around the world.
What could have been?
I mean, Janet was fantastic. She was a true hero. You know, if they ever were to do heroes versus villains again, I mean, she's captaining one side of this game. And what I loved about her is that she was just a regular everyday person. People underestimated her, and she just simply did not suck. You know, she was not an Instagram model. She's not a douche. She did not make anyone uncomfortable. She just put her head down. She went to work and she did it really well. She had some game. She had survival chops. She was great. She did not go out first, though. So if we are still scoring this game, I don't think I can give you a point, Liana. But, you know, I think we are all delighted that this was the outcome and not what we were all anticipating. And you know great. Also, for future seasons, it tells me let's check some of these expectations at the door. I mean, I know we all just talk about this ad nauseum and we got to predict something. And of course, that's what you're going to roll with. But now I have a blank slate on older contestants, and I'm optimistic that we're going to be seeing more Janets in the future.
Mm-hmm, I hope so.
All right, well, let's move on to Lauren. And while I was way off the mark on Janet, I don't know how I predicted this, but I specifically said that Lauren was going to be our fourth place finisher.
What?
I don't know how. Maybe it's because I sort of got the sense from her of like she was already making a lot of bonds, and it was like one of those things where, okay, well, if she makes it to the merge, I don't really see any reason why you would want to vote her out until it gets to the end where you say, oh, wow, she's way too socially powerful, which is sort of what ended up happening. And I also said she would have the biggest reactions of the season, which I would say so. Like, even when she was Jeff was walking her through the fire making challenge, she was still like making reactions and sort of like responding vocally to him. So, yeah, that was probably my best prediction the entire season of what happened to Lauren, who I would feel, to your point, Eric, I feel like looking back, Lauren might have been done like the biggest disservice when it comes to her edit, considering it was very much like the tell don't show. And I spoke about this with Rob in terms of still trying to figure out how to show the social game of like, we just heard so many times how Lauren was a threat to the end, but I don't think we really ever found out why exactly that was. So it was a weird sort of confusing thing where, okay, I guess now Lauren's the one to beat, and that's why she had to go out at four.
Mm-hmm. She's just so friendly. So I had her actually similar, although not as close. I had her in the finale and losing in the final three. So, yeah, so I had almost taken the a different take where it was essentially she was so friendly and so charismatic. But unfortunately, people were burned by her because she was almost like too cutthroat. So the jury felt betrayed by her, which is why she didn't receive any votes in the final three. So sort of two sides of the same yes, no Island of the Idols coin.
Oh, don't flip that coin.
Oh.
I did like when Dean, just I think for his own like jokingness, made that coin flip reference when Jeff's like, we just gotta roll the dice, and he made that suspect gesture, and Dean's like, well, actually it's more of a coin flip. Like, literally nobody else knows about that unless you still think Rob and Sandra are in the booth, you know?
Yeah, but she doesn't know, right? So it's like a very subtle Dean.
It's an inside joke for only Dean,
right?
Which sounds very Dean. Oh, I love Dean. All right, let's move on to Nora. Before we even get to this, I'm going to put out a hot take, and I don't know if you guys feel this way, but, you know, as we said, the 30s of Survivor are a very interesting era. This might be recency bias, but to be quite honest, Nora might be one of my favorite characters from the 30s of Survivor.
Stop.
I love her. Love her so much. Look what she brought to this finale. She's an incredible character.
I'm going to say it's not recency bias. It's, in fact, it's alternative bias, right? on seasons that stink, right, we look for and sort of like overinflate people like Dean and Nora because they're the best we got, right? We're hanging our hopes on any joy coming from these people. So it therefore translates into them becoming extremely beloved. For example, not to go too Big Brother heavy, but Nicole, this past season of Big Brother, she just simply was not the majority alliance, who were loathsome, right? She didn't actually do anything all that exciting, but everybody absolutely loves her. And Nora was great. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to minimize or poo-poo Nora in any way. I think that she was a great addition to the cast, but I got to push back on best character of the 30s. I don't know. What do you think, Liana?
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. Nora was a very entertaining character. I think, like, though, is she the best from all of the 30s? I mean, maybe. She is definitely unique. And I have never met an... I do not think I will ever meet anybody like Nora. And I think that's very fascinating. But yes, there is sort of this, you know, the difference between everything else on the season, having somebody who is so, you know, insane, like stands out quite a bit. But I'm not surprised, Mike, that is your take. You love to Nora.
I really did, to the point where I reached out to Leon and I'm like, I'm so sad that I did do Nora 2 weeks ago, because I would love to bring him back, because like you said, Eric, she did so much in this finale, between the last minute fledgling romance with Dean, between her winning the final immunity challenge, then proceeding to hold a meeting, but then delaying her own meeting because she wants to go wash off and eat some pineapple, to the acronyms that she came up with, to describing herself like a dish she would present on Top Chef. Like, this was a Nora-based finale. But Liana, I would love to know your impressions of Nora preseason and how you thought she would do based on that.
Yeah, so this is really interesting because I think like I picked up on the fact that I knew that she was going to be an intense person, but I didn't quite tap into how intense she was going to be. So I did have her going pre-jury, but essentially in my prediction, she got not swap screwed, but Dean. So, you know, it's like when the twist where it's you get voted out, but you're not actually voted out. You just get sent to the other tribe. Mm. So that's what happened to Dean. And then Dean targeted Nora.
So, well, you were sort of right about that.
Yeah, I was like, that's close-ish, right? I missed the whole weird crush bit of it, but like at least the Dean-Nora of it all seemed close.
Yeah, I had her making the jury, but I think it was primarily because like this was such a game-heavy cast that they're like, all right, we got to keep winning challenges, so we'll keep Nora around. She's kooky, but she's strong. And then I could see her like maybe winning a couple of challenges, but then at a certain point, like mid-merge, they're like, no, she's too strong. We got to get rid of her. Sort of like what happened to Aaron, actually, in the real season, where, I mean, even though I think I underestimated just how kooky Nora would be, which I'm happy about, because like you said, Eric, I think in the darkest times of this season, she provided at least a little levity, and I think the editors are very grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, she was great fun. There's no doubt about it. I just went down a really dark hole here where I started going through the 30s to see. Now I said maybe I spoke too soon, okay, maybe he's not the best, right? And then you start at like 30 31 32, and it's like, you know what, there's really nobody.
You know? Maybe it is Nora.
Maybe it is Nora. As you get more towards the middle, I mean, I don't know, you get some of the ties, Michaela's, David Wright, Chris, right. Noble, Natalie Cole, yeah, Christian,
yeah. Angelina.
Right. I mean, there's certainly other people in contention, but I agree. I think it's the fact that she was a beacon of light and hope in this season. And she was great. Mm-hmm. She was fun. You know what Nora is, though? She would be great on any show. It's not Survivor specific, so to speak. She would have been great if she was on The Bachelor. She would have been great if she was on The Apprentice. I don't know why I would say a show that hasn't been on in 10 years. But, you know, the point is she's just entertaining. And she's one of those people, she's undeniably Nora, which is what's so great about her. And she'd be fun if you dropped her in any situation. And she was fun in this situation. I don't want it to seem as if I was taking an anti-Nora stance. I was just, you just went all in on the statement. So I had a visceral reaction to it.
What is the show that Nora should be on? Like, I'm trying to think, like, what is the optimal reality TV show? Because I agree, I think she'd be great anywhere. Is it like Rock of Love? Is like, oh no, that, you know, where you Nora know what belongs? It is?
She needs to be one of the sharks on Shark Tank. I think that is a perfect. She's an entrepreneur. If she's in the chair, she's in every single episode. She's gonna have to like make deals with people, and she's gonna talk to them for probably like. I cannot imagine how much would be on the cutting room floor if she was a shark on Shark Tank, with just her being like, I really believe in you. Like, I'm feeling this. Are you feeling this? Yes, I will sponsor your dog waste bag management company. Absolutely. I'm in it for $4 billion.
They'll never be able to finish an episode, like the filming, right?
It's just going to be the season's going to be one day of filming.
Yeah.
I liked the fact that she was so self-aware that she knows that she's long-winded, but yet did nothing to stop it. That was very reminiscent of all of us as well. I was like, boy, this really reminds me of my own behavior at times. It's like, I'm going to just hold court here. I know that nobody cares what I'm saying, but it's not going to stop me.
I'm just going to keep going, and I'm going to take a bath in the ocean, too.
Well, let's talk about Dean, the Romeo to her Juliet, as he put it. So I had Dean making the jury. I thought he was going to be our purple contestant, if there was going to be any purple contestants. What he came across to me was so different. Again, I think I was seeing like Dean in the first two episodes than Dean at the end. And I don't know if he just like snapped out there or like gained some bravado as it went on, because he was just so quiet, and to say it for the 115th time, DK chillin' when he was talking with me. So I thought he would be the quietest contestant of the season, like wouldn't pop in confessionals so that the producers wouldn't know what to do with him. I would say that he'd like win a couple of immunity challenges, like he'd be that sort of challenge beast. But then we get to the final tribal council and he'd be like surprisingly one of the most well-spoken of all the jurors. So people would be like, where did Dean come from? Which I guess people were also asking by the end as well, where he's touting necklaces and idols and taunting Tommy about doing advanced algebra.
Yeah. Oh my God. I love that advanced algebra was like the highest level of math that Dean decided to think of. Like, we couldn't even go calculus here. Like, nah, advanced algebra is fine. So I actually had something sort of similar. So in response to your question about what type of soup are you, Dean said that he was not a huge soup guy, maybe Thai coconut chicken curry or chunky chili. So I had Dean making the jury. And then I essentially also said Dean just couldn't identify what type of player he wanted to be, similar to his inability to pick a soup. Did he want to be in charge? Did he want to be behind the scenes? Was he a challenge beast? Did he try to throw challenges? So I sort of had this like waffle be Dean's MO this whole season. So I don't know if it was him or if it was production that was like, what do we do with this guy? I don't know. But I think I, for some reason, got similar vibes.
Maybe he's just like so multifaceted, right? We didn't realize this, but Dean is just a man of many faces. You know, I have a question for you guys. And I think this is interesting. I haven't heard this discussed that much. I've heard the comparison to last season discussed, but if you had a vote in this based on what we know now, who do you think played the better game, Dean or Tommy?
I think it's so hard with the whole, like, let me tell you and not show you, because it's very difficult to get a sense of like, okay, because I wasn't out there with Tommy, I don't sort of get this charm thing, I guess, that he had going on. I mean, obviously, he had a very strong social game, but it's really difficult when you can't experience it. Whereas I can watch Dean go on that treasure hunt and steal that idol out from under Tommy's, I was going to say colorblind nose, but that's not a thing.
That's not a thing.
No.
I think aren't all noses colorblind?
That's right. Yeah.
Color seeing noses would be a whole other thing. That would be amazing.
So yeah, the sixth sense. So it's really difficult for me to compare the two because like, yeah, I'd be like, oh yeah, Dean played the better game because I can see him doing all these things. Yet at the same time, I know how much weight the social capital has. And so I can't help but then want to recognize Tommy's game. So I guess in all of my waffling, I guess I would probably still go with Tommy just because I think that the social game is such an important part of it. And also, can I vote for Dean? Absolutely not. He's a crazy man.
I see this point, but I mean, Dean played from behind. I guess it's two totally polar opposite games.
Yes,
right.
Tommy played from the front the whole time. Dean essentially played from behind and was just kind of like a tag along and a leftover. But if I believe it was a voicemail that called in on with Rob a couple of weeks ago, was detailing how, although really unfun for the audience, that Dean rained on the parade of several supposed big potential moves of the season and directly or indirectly his willingness or unwillingness to participate in certain votes sort of led to them happening or not happening. Whether this was by design or not is a totally different story, but by simply sticking to whatever vision he had for the season, he did seemingly have some impact on what was able to happen. He did manage to stay. So, I mean, he definitely was doing something right. I think one of the peculiar things is why weren't we told the story more of Tommy and Dean best bros? Also,
There was a secret scene in the Merge episode where it's like Dean finally meets Tommy. And I'm very surprised, again, with how heavy-handed and ultimately incorrect the "oh, a woman's going to win this season" scene was. I'm very surprised that we had a scene of what's going to be our final two meeting and forming a very important relationship that's going to dictate, you know, this very pivotal vote. And we don't get it on the main show, which was really weird. But yeah, I mean, it was also weird seeing like that bromance emerge because, yeah, again, it sort of came out of nowhere, but it was very like heavy in that finale episode where, you know, Tommy asked Dean to help him look for the idol. We sort of see like the Cook Islands esque scenario where they're like, well, yeah, this person's obviously third, so it's basically going to be between the two of us. I really do wonder how this season would have looked had we sort of been shown more of that. Maybe people would have said like, oh, this is a Dom Wendell situation once again. But I mean, it was such an interesting pairing to me because of what you said. Like, it really was like a representation of these old school values versus sort of more of these new school values of, hey, all these twists are thrown into the game, I'm going to take advantage of them, versus I'm going to rely on relationships and use that to build my safety instead. I personally probably would have voted Tommy. I talked about this with Rob, that I think the two general reasons behind a lot of votes on reality TV shows are relationships and information. And I feel that while Dean had access to things, I think Tommy made a valid point in saying that, like, yes, you had them, but you did do anything with them. You know, I spoke about if he had played the idol on Lauren, for instance, at the final five, could that have been a flashier move than just sort of pulling it out at the final tribal council? I'm not entirely sure, but I think the fact that Dean had all this hardware to show, he made for an extremely entertaining final tribal council. But at the end of the day, these people are like, I don't know you. And I know Tommy, so I'm going to give it to Tommy here.
Yeah, likability and sort of relationships, Mike, to your point, they are by far the most important things in these games, because when you come up against moments which Tommy faced in this game, that, you know, they could have thrown a challenge and gotten him out. They could have gone after him when he was outnumbered in the, you know, mixed tribes. I think that the only thing that saves you in those situations is having people want you there. So you're not even an option in their mind to get rid of, because they are allied with you, or they have fun with you, or whatever the case may be. You can be as strategic as you want. You can get 5 million idols. And sometimes, you know, we see the Bens and the Mike Holloways run the table that way. But the fact of the matter is, in totality, having people want you to be there is the best way to stay. And that's what Tommy did. So, you know, kudos to him. They should have done more montages. And we got him a little bit of like, Tommy's my number one ally, or people laughing with Tommy. Man, I just love this guy. I had the best time with him. You know, there was, because that was his game, right? So we needed to see more moments of him on the beach making people laugh, or whatever the case may be. I guess you could say that I get the sense really that there wasn't that much strategy. I think that when we heard sort of this notion of the rock salad foundation and the earthquake and this and that, that this was one of those sort of cultish sort of groups of, hey, we're well entrenched, we're controlling this, and we don't need to do anything. But they didn't tell us that story because of the participants. So we never saw Janet and Dan and Dean and Tommy and Lauren get together and do this thing. And I think, to your point, they thought people found it very boring when Wendell and Dominic did it. So they didn't want to tell that story again. And I think they just found themselves without a story to tell, essentially. You know, that's what it came down. I don't think they were in danger the entire game, but it was never once presented to us like, hey, this is one of the more dominant alliances in Survivor history. And it never seemed that way. It seemed like they were at times very vulnerable. But, you know, the facts ultimately prove out otherwise.
It's so interesting, and we'll sort of segue into Tommy as well to get your thoughts on him preseason, Liana, because I can't remember a winner in more recent memory that seemed, from a cast perspective, more universally loved. Like, literally everybody that I was talking to at the after party or even hearing from on social media are like, man, I love Tommy. Tommy's a great guy. Even when I was talking to someone like Dean, who's like, oh yeah, Tommy totally deserved it. Nora says, oh yeah, Tommy did what I did, but better. You know, maybe it was just sort of a blanket statement for everyone in the cast to support one another. But I think it's very appropriate that, you know, everyone's like, Tommy's just such a great guy. And I can imagine that's a large reason why they wanted to give him the win at the end of the day.
Like, that really makes me want to meet him. Like, does he have some sort of love potion number 9 that he's doling out to everybody that he meets? Because I noticed the exact same thing. Everyone speaks of him favorably. And it's just, like, I want to know what that spell is, because no offense to Tommy, I would love to sell it. Yes, get me on Shark Tank with Nora being like, yes, I will buy your love potion.
I have someone to use this on who's stretching right over there.
For Dean. Yeah, exactly. Because he just seemed to be so captivating, and that didn't necessarily translate through the television. And so, like, that's why it's difficult, because I didn't get that sense. But the way I hear everybody talk about it is like, man, this Tommy guy. And so I think that difference is very interesting. Because, I mean, Mike, you met him, right? So does he have that je ne sais quoi aura about him?
I mean, he was fun to talk to. This was also a cast that I greatly enjoyed talking to. So, I mean, we spoke about a variety of topics. He loves Buzz Lightyear. He hates soup. I believe he actually defied the odds in my soup poll, as well as he did during the game. But, you know, I had a good time talking with Tommy preseason. I mean, I could also see like a situation where you're like out on the island, and I could imagine that there's also a different scenario between talking with a reporter about your game and just like, you know, broing down about personal moments. And I can imagine that Tommy, I think, really captured people in those moments where he was very supportive to others. And, you know, I think we saw that in the first episode, one of the few scenes where we saw Tommy actually utilizing these social bonds, where he's finding like little details to connect with on people. Like he went to Lauren and is like, oh, you're married. I'm probably going to propose to my girlfriend when I get back. You know, Jack, you are a young guy from the East Coast. So am I. Let's make plans to go surfing. Jamal, you work in education. I'm an educator, too. I'll talk about my fourth grade teacher.
Wait, what? Tommy's a teacher? I wish you would have mentioned that.
I wish there was some sort of rubric that we could have used.
Oh, well, my God. Yeah,
I think that's the thing. There's a real disconnect because I'm going to just call a spade a spade. He was terrible television, right? Yeah. His catchphrases stunk. Tommy and Mommy was cringeworthy. The teaching time with Tommy, it was one of the worst, like, through lines that you could ever possibly have. And this is the best he got. And he fell back on it time and time again. So he obviously, it must be a really nice guy. He's just also for a while. And again, not to reference Big Brother too much, but Big Brother was kind of broken for a little while because it was sort of cracked for like the unassuming man to be in a very good shape in the game because people go after you if you're Lane or if you're like, say, you know, going back to like a Donathan, those people are in big trouble. If you are someone who's sure to get jury votes like that, you're in big trouble. If you're a big physical threat, you're in big trouble. If you're overly scheming, you're in big trouble. And if you just are just kind of the right level of there, you are not in trouble. And that's really what Tommy was. It was a throwback in that way. And he was just kind of just there to pick up the pieces. Just leave me alone. I'm nice, Tommy. I'm here with my mommy. I'll teach you something. And just leave me be and I'll see you in 39 days. You know, hey, listen, to his credit, it was effective. He's got a whole cast that are saying they love him. He's got $1 million. I don't think the man could give one rat's ass if he was not entertaining on television. You know, who cares? Mm-hmm. You know, he won. So it's fine.
Yeah, so I mean, that's super funny because actually, so my preseason prediction for him, I had him making the jury and I essentially had that prediction where it was he was a solidly average player all around. He got along with most players, but was unable to make any like strong, meaningful connections, part of strategic moves, but didn't initiate anything himself. So very sort of like middle of the road type player, like not the best, not the worst. And Tommy talked about this multiple times, like lowering the threat level. But in my vision, that wasn't enough to win, whereas apparently that's not the case.
Yeah, well, so I think it's revisionist history. Sorry to interrupt, but he did not lower his threat level. He had no threat level. Yeah. That's the thing. It's very nice that he's crafted this narrative now. And I'm sure in his head he was doing that. But in truth, I do not think he incepted this into their minds. And I mean, perhaps to a slight extent, but he really just literally wasn't doing anything threatening. So, yes, that could have been a conscious choice, but I don't really chalk that up as this mega strategic move so much as a comfortable way to describe what happened after the fact.
Right. And I think, you know, I wonder how much of that was also him trying to play something up. Like, I know in the final tribal council, when they said like, hey, Tommy, you didn't win any immunities or get any idols. He's like, yeah, I thought those things were curses that made people get targeted. And when I talked to him afterwards, he's like, yeah, I mean, he did throw challenges up to a certain point, but he's like, I mean, I was looking for idols. I just wanted to spin that to the jury. So I wasn't too embarrassing about the fact that this guy had all these idols and I didn't. But yeah, I had Tommy making the finale. I said, you know, I think he would have been a big social threat in terms of making these bonds with people and just having them trust him. Like he said in the final tribal council, it's his day to day job for him to get like 23 individual children to trust him and confide in him in some regard. So I think his experience definitely carried over there. But I thought that people would have seen that. And so he would have gone in like the sixth or fifth place spot because they're like, he's athletic enough that we can't let him get into those final few challenges. And he's also social enough that like he would win if he got to the end, which Elaine was also prognosticating in the previous episode. So maybe she saw it before any of them did.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Before we move on to more fun and games, we're going to take a quick break to listen to a word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we are back, so let's keep on keeping on. All right, so, Eric, I wanted to turn things over to you to ask if you had anything you wanted to teach us as our final lesson here, or if you're going to leave your house to us and we just have to reside in your studio for the last few days of the podcast.
Well, I did rack my brain quite seriously, and I've been having an existential crisis for about the last 48 hours in advance of this segment. It's because I don't think I have any knowledge to teach you. And this is the problem, right? I mean, my level of expertise really all revolves around completely useless things. So I put myself on bookcameo.com to see if I could teach you about some of the latest additions to the site. And instead, I spent 1 hour watching Paul Rubin's videos. And then I forgot what I was actually trying to do.
Wait. Is Paul Rubens on Cameo?
Oh, he's on now. And he was the one I happened to really get drawn in by. He was picking a fight between two parents because the child sent the parents a video. And what happened was, is that one of them used to let him watch Pee Wee movies and the other one did not. So he was antagonizing the mother, who was not a fan. And he's going, "I heard you weren't a fan of mine back in the day." And he's like really like digging in on the woman. So
wait. I'm going to try to play it. Which one is this
yes.
for?
I think it was. Maybe the very first one.
Is it by Jeff's son for Jack?
Yes, and, yes,
okay.
Yes, that is correct.
Let's see if we can get a listen to this.
Well, hello, Jack and Linda. It's me, Paul Rubens, Pee Wee Herman. Don't pretend you don't recognize me, Linda. I know that we've had our disagreements over the years, that you weren't always the biggest Pee Wee fan, and maybe still need some convincing. Well, your son Jeff told me all about it. How excited and happy he was as a child that he could watch me with his dad, not always with his mom. And he wished as a little tiny, wonderful child that his mom liked Pee-wee a little bit more. Well, I wish the very same thing, Linda. You don't know how it made me feel. I'm just kidding. Or am I? May I call you Lynn? Well, I just did. Jack, Linda, all kidding aside, I hope you and your son, your whole family, have an incredible holiday. Feliz Navidad. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. I sincerely hope that you have an amazing 2020. Your best yet as a family. And all the best.
Oh my God. There's still 15 seconds left.
Did this do it for
now,
Linda?
You can see.
Are you convinced? No? Well, I don't know what else to do. I'll beg you. Linda, please.
Why is he vamping? He just finished. There was a minute, 42 seconds.
I got distracted.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, I was like, I don't even care how we got here. Lessons, who cares?
I want to replace my whole holiday list with just everyone, please pull your money together and get me Paul Rubin's cameos, please.
Yeah. Okay. So first of all, this is insane because this was purchased by the Sun.
Yes.
Right. This is he's $250. How old is the son, first of all?
I mean, so
bizarre.
The parents are together, or was this like even worse? Like, it's getting dark in the middle. Like, yeah, that's why I chose to live with dad, right? Like, it's really
Pee Wee Herman.
I don't know. Paul Rubens, I think, is also trying to channel like a Pee Wee meets Mr. Rogers type of thing, where he has a very like soft tone to his voice, but is still doing weird Pee Wee things. It's very discomforting.
And looking at him at this point, it does not help the situation. Also, if you can, if anyone calls up the actual video, very unsilly. Okay, so anyway, that lesson was scrapped after that. I got totally distracted, right? So now, I don't know if you guys have heard me talk about this in the past, but I am closing in on 1,000 complete seasons of reality TV viewing. So I thought to myself, you guys are very well versed, but there's got to be something within the 1,000. So I started particularly, I had my eye on a show that was called The Player on UPN back in the day. Ooh. And it was a competition to be the ultimate player. And then bizarrely, at the end of this, it was revealed that the voice in the sky who had been controlling this game the whole time was none other than Boston Rob for no reason whatsoever.
What?
Yes. And the reason was because Robin Cass cast this show and she had cast Marquesas as well. And so they had some sort of a relationship. And then and the whole season they teased. And finally, we're going to tell you the ultimate player who's been pulling the strings, a real mastermind. And like you're thinking it's going to be like someone whose brand is like this, like super suave Casanova type of person. But no. It was Rob. So I was going to prepare a lesson on the player on UPN, but that's all I remember about it. And then instead what happened is I had a second existential crisis because I started doing quick math about how long 1,000 seasons of reality TV must be. And then I started thinking, boy, shows like The Biggest Loser or The Bachelor, those are 2-hour episodes. And I started doing some quick math. I got myself somewhere up to about 30,000 hours, divided that by 24 hours, and realized that I may have spent as much as 3 full years of my life watching reality TV. And then I actually just got in the fetal position and I stopped preparing that lesson as well, which was supposed to also include a show called Big Man on Campus. And I was going to, you know, just also rant about Kid Nation because I take any opportunity to do that. So then that lesson was scrapped. Right. So then I was going to talk about, well, we're doing an all winter season. So I started preparing what a Big Brother all winter season would look like. I got as far as Jackson, Casey, Josh, Nicole, Steve, and I stopped.
Yeah. Then you just took like a long, hard look at things and you're sort of sitting at the computer for a while.
Oh,
like, what is life, right? Then I started preparing a pro wrestling lesson in honor of Elaine. And then I really had nothing intelligent to say about that either. So what I realized is and what I've learned through my own lesson is that I really have nothing to contribute to society other than like my brain has gone to mush. It's just 3 full years, not sleeping either, just the full duration of 3 years. And all I remember are things like, that time in 2002 that Rob Mariano was the surprise guest on a show nobody watched. So it's just
So I'm looking at the player now because you think like, what is the player referred to? But it refers to like the player that it said several men compete with each other using their quote unquote player skills to seduce an attractive woman. And it was hosted by Boston Rob.
Wait, how do you win?
You had to like basically like be the Mac Daddy. Like it was like testing your skills. I think the woman chose who won, but they weren't dating. Yes. I don't think. Or maybe they were. I don't remember.
It was like, oh, this guy's the most Rico Suave, so I'm going to pick him.
Yes, yes, yes. And the other show that I was preparing was on at the very same time. And that was Big Man on Campus, which was the collegiate version of The Bachelor. But I remember literally nothing about that other than they had a toga party and that he had sidekicks that were named Blue and Remington. But that's all I remember about the whole show. And I don't remember the main guy or girl's name, just the sidekicks. And then I thought, and that really also put me down the path of like, so I watched all of this, but I didn't really retain any of it either.
Probably for the best, though.
Yeah, I think so.
Remember. I mean, you didn't remember Blue and Remington, who I'm sure went on to illustrious careers as the wingmen of, maybe they were Boston Rob's wingmen on The Player, and they were sort of like utilitary players that were used in any sort of regard for any UPN reality show.
That's right. That's right. So the long story long is no, I do not have a lesson for you.
I think though we learned a lot.
Yeah. I don't know if now it's crazy because I was thinking of this again, that really confusing opening scene of Boston Rob and Sandra on the hill, and I realized like maybe that's how they should have revealed Boston Rob as the player. Like they cut to like some serene meadow, and there Boston Rob is sitting with a pimp hat on, being like, "I'm the player. I got the girl in the end."
They have a big statue of him.
Yeah, it's like a fedora on. Yeah,
they reveal like, we'll pull out the tarp and this will reveal who the ultimate player was, who the narrator was, and it's the big Boston Rob head.
One thing I do actually remember is that obviously like the cast members had no idea who he was because it had no relevance whatsoever to what they were doing there. So like when they did the big reveal, it was like met by like, you know, like fake reaction of like excitement. Whoa, I never could have imagined it would be him. Yeah, well, that's because you don't know who that is. So, of course, you couldn't have imagined that, you know. this is nothing to do with the player, but going to the statue of it all. I did like conceptually more than other people did. The basic premise of Island of the Idols, I think one of the things The Bachelor does so well is this world building, the same as The Challenge. And I like the fact that Survivor is thinking that there might come a time, right, that we're going to need anchors to the series. And I do actually like sort of creating this Survivor universe where there are the people that are at the top of this pecking order. And I like bringing, you know, bridging generations, just like movies reboot every 25 years, because then parents bring their kids to the things that they liked as a child. This is a good way to engage old audiences and new audiences and have sort of these loops throughout seasons and say, but then, and to your point, Liana, it was a lot of fun. It was funny. But I think they could have done so much more with it. They're both really talented, likable, entertaining characters. And I would have loved to see them unleashed on the actual game. And yes, I could see how that would have tampered with the sanctity of the game. But I would have loved to see more situation-specific advice given. I think, imagine they meet up with a Nora type, right? Or a you know, one of like the really early people who were there who did not last or whatever. And they said, hey, here's what I'm facing in the game. And the two of them gave them a foolproof plan to go back and execute. And then we get to watch Nora go back to the island and try and pull off the strategy that they rightfully provided. I think it would have been so much more fun than these things that really were just totally like inconsequential, because this almost felt like it was just these should have been secret scenes, you know, like this was just like totally a tangent from the actual show. It had nothing to do with the show or the strategy of the show. So I would have loved to see them dig in a little bit more, but I liked the basic premise more than most, I think.
Well, speaking of Island of the Idols lessons, we were thinking to break out the oofometer to actually talk about in a little bit more detail some of the specific lessons that we were learning on the Island of the Idols. So what I did is I went and I rewatched every single Island of the Idols lesson, and I tried to pull out one, what was the lesson? What did Boston Rob and Sandra teach the person? And then two, what was the test? Some follow the format, some not so much. And I thought we could maybe give some ratings to these Island of the Idols lessons.
Yeah, we're grading the graders, essentially.
Exactly.
Love it.
So, okay. So the first one I want to talk about, we're going to jump around a little bit. This isn't chronological order. From episode 4, Mike's favorite character from the 30s, Nora, when she went to the Island of the Idols to be the caller. So, or like that was like her ultimate sort of test. So the lesson here was the art of persuasion. Okay. So that was what the title was. And this was, of course, a classic example where the Survivor producers could show the Eric giving away the immunity necklace for the millionth time. You got to see, you know, Parv and Yule, which again, oh man, if only they would play again. So this one, they actually like gave examples of, oh, this is what we mean by the art of persuasion, which, by the way, Nora goes, oh yeah, my art of persuasion is very intellectual.
I'm sure.
Like, yes. And then, of course, the test here was, can you persuade the tribe to make you the caller in the next immunity challenge? So what do we think about this particular lesson?
Well, my inclination is that they really failed as teachers, right? Because she did not perform. This almost makes some lick of sense. I can get from point A to point B here, so it's not a total non sequitur, but they failed their student very poorly, right?
Yeah, and, that was one of the very few times that they did end up failing their student.
Right. So 2 + 2 in this case equaled to like 17 to Nora, you know. So I just think that I don't know if they just did a poor job. It didn't translate, or if it was the student needed a little extra, you know, learning or a follow up lesson or something like that. But I'll say at least this made logical sense. So I will say no oofs for me from a sort of cohesive standpoint, but I will say for the follow-up performance and how well they did as instructors, I mean, that did not go well for Nora. So that is a 3 oof situation there.
Yeah, I would say so. I think that, you know, the ultimate fail, and I mean, maybe I'm not a teacher, maybe it's a situation where it's like, look, you can work as hard as you can on a student, But maybe sometimes they're just not destined to do well in a certain subject. We did have Nora try to use Rob's advice of the this for that persuasion, except she was extremely vague with it and said, well, you have to agree to put me in this position before I tell you what the challenge is. So I don't know. And they were also early in the game, so maybe they didn't realize how hard line they should be with it. But yeah, I would say the lesson itself actually was one of the most like connected ones, but from an execution perspective, it was probably one of the least well executed ones. So I agree. I think a 3 oofer would sort of wash it all out, average out to it.
Yeah. Also, the implementation is sort of bizarre because although, yes, it was trying to persuade them of something, why would she be persuading them to be the caller? You know, like that. So like in and of itself, yes, that is an act of persuasion. It's just one that was totally without purpose and she failed at it. So.
Yeah, and there was also that question of like, OK, if she won, she got the block of vote, which came up later on. But like, was it that she could only use it at that tribal council? So she had to, in fact, throw the challenge as the caller to get it like that. That was a bit confusing. So I'm going to officially from both of us rate this.
Three oofs outside.
And that was, of course, the return of the oof little sound bites from the Great Wolf of America.
Yeah, I think the thing about this one was like the basic structure was there, because as I will talk about this next lesson, they don't really teach anything. So let's talk about episode 3. This was when Vince went to steal the fire. The lesson was described as staying calm under pressure. Okay. And he was taught to low crawl. He was taught this is what the cartoon map of the other tribe looks like. And his test was, of course, stealing fire. So in trying to put together any type of cohesion to this, I was like, I don't understand how low crawling represents staying calm under pressure. But like, Mike, maybe you have some insight here.
I mean, honestly, if you look at the spectrum of the lessons that were being taught, I'm assuming we'll get to the Jamal of it all. But I kind of think sabotage would have worked better here, right? Especially if it was stealing fire. Maybe it could have been instead of stealing fire, like put out the fire or steal a personal item from somebody. You know, I feel like that would have been a better way to teach something of like, you need to surreptitiously sneak your way into a situation and be able to really have people start pointing fingers at one another instead of staying calm under pressure in a situation that they put you in. Not to mention, you know, I think this has been explained multiple times by Christian most recently that it's not really the most pressurized situation. Yes, you might have Tommy's night terrors wake everybody up and they say, what the hell are you doing here? But I would not say he'd, you know, suffer as a result of it. I mean, it provided extremely entertaining results. That might be one of, just from an entertainment perspective, one of the best IOI segments, because you had Vince breaking down and Boss Rob asking, you don't know where you're from. You had Sandra hiding behind a leaf. Like, there was so much entertaining stuff, but the lesson itself was just so misguided. And it did end up getting Vince voted out with an idol in his pocket. So I'm going to go with 4 oofs here.
Yeah, first of all, it feels like Vince has not been on this show in like 6 years. Yeah. Like, it's so far removed from the. Yeah. I would also say that this was just clearly them messing with him. There was like they didn't attend the story meeting that day, so they didn't know what they were supposed to do, and clearly were just winging it on the fly and amusing themselves. Like, they had not yet checked out. They were still having fun with this. They were excited to be back on the island. So for entertainment, yeah, it's a 5 foo. For lesson teaching, definitely 4 oofs. And to once again echo the sentiment that you were just mentioning again, Mike, is that, yeah, let's just say he did get caught, right? Like, if I was in that situation and I actually got caught red-handed and they were like, what are you doing? I would say, oh, sorry, it was my task from Island of the Idols, gotta go. And that would be the end of it. Like, that would have no bearing on your game at all. It wouldn't be that. It would be funny, if anything. You could just play it up like, oh, this is embarrassing. You know, it's the notion that they would have caught him and then be like, traitor, what are you doing on our land? Like, that's ridiculous. Like, who would possibly care, even if it totally unraveled? So right, the lesson, it really made no sense whatsoever, let alone the fact that they taught him things entirely unrelated to it.
Yeah, right. Like, yes, of course, stealing fire, the very common test. Yeah, this one was just like, it was so funny. But I'm happy you mentioned it, Mike. The, you know, Vince starts to open up about himself. Boston Rob's like, where are you from? You don't know where you're from? Like when he's crying and full of emotion, just like that in and of itself was also just so worth it.
All right. Well, let's formally give Vince's time on Island of the Idols. Four oofs.
All right. So let's move into our next lesson. So this is from episode 12, Dean and the Coin Flip. So this
five.
Is five. Yes. So the lesson, of course, was jury management, which actually here they do give some true lessons. Like Sandra and Boston Rob talk about, oh yes, you have to do storytelling. You have to play up the bravado. And then, of course, the test here was the coin flip. So how do we feel? How many oofs, Eric, are you feeling with Dean and the whole coin flip situation?
It's a fiver, no doubt about it. I can't. It's just terrible. I hate for things in the game, which is, of course, the ghost island of it all, to come down to just this random crap. It's very unfortunate. These people work their asses off, both in production and the cast members. And this late in the game to have something like this, it's not a good test. It has nothing to do with the game. And it is actually like has some impact on things. So does not sit well with me. It's a five oof for sure.
Yeah, and I think that, I don't know, the jury, this is the one that I think is the test is most divorced from the lesson, because I think, like you said, the lesson actually might have been probably one of the better ones, especially with the timing of the game, considering how the last rounds of Survivor now, you know, are between the Fire Making Challenge and the Final Three are a little less traditional. This is a good time to say, okay, you really need to start thinking about your end game, who you want to sit next to, and what you want to say. And who knows, maybe that lit a fire under Dean, because that's when he really started to heat up and get all these advantages and things. But then to say you're going to test this by having something to show off to the jury by flipping a coin for it, that feels like something you could more so apply to, like, what was Elaine's, like the risk management one, you know, which could also be being calm under pressure too, you know, and finding the idol in the middle of a challenge. So it felt like the actual lesson itself was definitely one of the more divorced ones from the actual test. So just from that execution perspective, and I would say it's not, I guess the entertainment came from Dean thinking that legacy advantage was real. I'm so happy that got brought up in the finale, though, as we talked about with Rob, good on Jamal for really like coaching Dean and being like, no, it's okay, buddy. You really meant well. And I think that definitely says something about your game. But, you know, we got to see Rob and Sandra's reaction from that. But I think from an actual test perspective, this, unfortunately, I think they saved the worst for last.
Dean should not have asked Jamal if it was real. That was the part where he really went off the rails in the final thing. It was very nice the way Jamal handled it, but he should have just said, I have this is real, not right, Jamal, right? Because, you know, he was sort of opening the door for it to get away from him. But this actually reminds me of something, and I get logistically why they didn't do this, but Island of the Idols would have been so much more entertaining if they brought in people who truly excelled at these specific parts of the game or skills in Survivor to speak on them. You know, like how great would it be if Todd were the coach, jury management or final tribal or something like that? What if we had Philip there to speak with Nora about crazy like a fox, you know, hey, here's how to get to get your craziness to work to your advantage. Some of the potential dynamics we could have seen could have been so much more. And they were a little flat because they were just sort of disjointed. They barely had anything to do with Rob or Sandra or the person there or the lesson they were teaching. And that certainly was the case with this one.
Yeah. So I do want to mention that that Dean greets, you know, we have all these emotional greetings when they come to the Island of the Idols and they greet Boston Rob and Sandra. Dean just goes, sup, y'all. That was his greeting to the two legends of Survivor. But yeah, I love that point about like, oh, I wish, you know, there was somebody where, this actually made sense that this person was teaching me something. Because like, yes, being told about jury management from somebody who lost in a final two situation, maybe not the best person. So like, I get that.
All right. So unfortunately, Dean's test is going to get the full
five golden oofs.
Nice holiday reprise.
Amazing. Okay, so the next one I want to talk about, this is from episode 6, and this one I had actually forgotten about until I went back to rewatch. This is Elaine when her whole thing was getting that hidden immunity idol that was hidden at the challenge. So her lesson was having the courage to be daring, which, okay. And it starts with the sand timer where Boston Rob pulls the plug on the sand timer and the sand starts running down. And before Boston Rob can even explain anything, all of a sudden, like Boston Rob is literally in the middle of saying, if the time runs out on that bottle, and Elaine goes, I'll do it. So this one, like, one, I don't know what the test was, because I guess the test was getting the idol, but like having the courage to be daring. Like, I guess there is a through line here, but because of the whole nonsense with this plug on the sand timer and all of that, it's just like, wait, what is going on right now? It was very, very bizarre to rewatch.
Yeah. And then every time that he gets on them, he's like, you shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. It's
like, you know what? That's the name of the lesson. The lesson is, you are teaching me to have the courage to be daring. So I did just that with flying colors. And now you're going to, you know, go off on me. You're going to ream me, so to speak. That it's like, what are you supposed to do? That's what you told me that I was here for. That's the objective. So how would I know that, like, oh, I'm supposed to not do the lesson? Like, what would make you think that's like the equivalent of saying, show up at tribal and not cast a vote? You know, because, oh, I know I'm supposed to do the opposite of what you're telling me to here. I mean, it's completely ludicrous that the players who are filming a TV show are there with the executive producers and these legends of the game. And they're told, we want you to have the courage to be daring. And then you do it. And then they get mad at you. It's just totally ridiculous. Or any of the other examples, you know, where it was like, you shouldn't have done that. It's like, well, you told me to. So yeah, I was just playing along. Like, come on.
We saw that in the very first episode, right? When Rob was like, okay, you should make fire against me. And she's like, oh, you shouldn't have done that. I was able to negotiate with you. And it's like, how was she supposed to know that? I think that's the thing as well, is that I don't know, especially, you know, in talking with them in the preseason, I think they counted on there being a lot more negotiation, that these players would be more hesitant to accept these tests. But I think it's representative of just how gung-ho they all were, that, you know, Janet was the only person to outright refuse. And you had Kelly and Lauren, who maybe hesitated for 1 second and got a better deal out of it, but literally everyone else accepted it. So I wonder if maybe it wasn't Elaine and maybe it was a different person, would that timer really have affected things? But it just seems like, due to the structure of everything, like, the timer didn't need to be there, you know?
They should also announce that when people lose their votes, because there was not a singular instance on this entire season where the lost vote actually mattered strategically, which also goes to once again show how firmly entrenched a lot of these players really were. But I hate how they bury it in the end. So it's just like, oh yeah, you're voted out, because, and we didn't get to the full complement of votes, so no one knows this, because it has no impact if you lose your vote. So I think the whole structure is a little flawed. And in this particular test, well, I mean, first of all, the naming seems a little redundant. You know, the courage to be daring. It could have just been courage or daring. You know, it's but
yeah, it's,
but,
like, the strength to be strong.
Right. So the patience to wait for the test. But since we don't actually know what it really was, you know, this is an okay one. I'll give it a 2 oofs. How about you, Mike?
Yeah, I think I'll go along the lines of that. Like, it was innocuous enough, and I could see where they were coming from. It felt inessential, but I guess she was also daring in, you know, actually finding the idol in the challenge, which, again, I would say is more so calm under pressure or even risk management. But I think it's still, I could see the through line there. It just maybe was not the most well thought out thing, especially given the player psychology. So it's not too over the line. I'll give it a 2 as well.
There's also no instance in Survivor in which you need to make an instantaneous daring decision. That is not a thing. You actually have all the time in the world to think about all of the results of everything that you're doing. So, you know, it's not really even a skill of the game whatsoever.
Oh my God. Or I don't know, like, I'm just trying to think of in any way a sand timer would somehow be involved in Survivor. Like, I don't know, maybe pouring out the rice, sort of similar to that. But yeah, this is just very bizarre. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I think 2 oofs probably makes sense.
How to be a player with Boston Rob.
Yeah, exactly. Where he reveals himself as the narrator. He's narrating the entire challenge and you don't find out who it is until the very end.
Right.
All right. So we'll give this test for Elaine.
2 oofs.
Artistic.
Yeah, it's very like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Mm-hmm. I think, well, that is the sound clip, yeah.
I don't know, actually. I'll ask Will about it.
Yeah, all right. Okay, so let's get into to the last one that, Mike, you alluded to earlier. We have to talk about this. Jamal and the fake legacy advantage. Because rewatching this, you know, this is the Island of the Idols visit that was in the middle of the big merge, you know, double episode. Really, really rough. I went back and just watched this. This might be my favorite moment of the entire season. It was so funny because you have the juxtaposition of Jamal pulling up to the beach, just smiling ear to ear. He meets them. He's so happy. He even quotes the queen stays queen to Sandra. He sits down. He's like rolling out the little piece of paper and Boston Rob's like, read it, read the piece of paper. And then he's like, if it seems too good to be true, it probably is. And it's like, you've lost your vote. It was so, so funny. And the lesson, of course, was if it seems too good to be true, it probably is, which I don't really understand how that's a lesson. There's no test. Boston Rob is just making fun of Jamal. Like, what's in your hand? A pencil, you know, and like Jamal, the look on Jamal's face, he's just so over it. Oh my God. And Jamal just like at the end just fucks right off. Like he's so mad about the whole situation. It's so, so funny. Oh, I loved this moment.
It's so, yeah. I mean, this is like peak passive aggressive idols, right? Where we talked about it before with like, you don't know where you're from. This is like, well, Jamal, you fell for a trap that you didn't even know was a trap because you didn't even know what Island of the Idols was. Yeah. Congratulations. And I still hold down. I know that Jamal has said in our exit press with him, he's like, no, I don't feel screwed over at all. You know, I had the ability to work with this and, you know, it ended up getting, it was something that Dean tried to show off in the finale that kind of, you know, made him seem a bit foolish in front of the jury. But that being said, I still feel like he got completely screwed here, more so than anyone who went to Island of the Idols, except maybe Janet, as a result of Dean and the coin flip. So it's tough because, yeah, I agree. Like it had a lot of entertainment, but almost at the expense of somebody else.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
And I also don't know, because then he connects it to sabotage, right? He's like, oh, now you've learned sabotage. So now you have to give this blank piece of paper to somebody else. So I'm going to give this 4. I don't think it's the full 5 because, again, it has that entertainment value. But at the same time, I feel like this was probably the worst, quote unquote, lesson that somebody got because he got nothing. He had nothing to do. You know, he couldn't get his vote back. It was, well, you're already in this hole. So your test is to drag someone down into this hole with you.
Well, Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no. I mean, that was the other thing was it was confusing about like what exactly is the test? Like, can you write on the parchment? Like, very, very odd.
Right. Also, the best applications of that by far would not be sabotaging someone else. I wonder, and this probably takes it like a step even further to the terrible, was he required to do something idiotic like the legacy advantage and try to, quote, sabotage someone? Because if they gave me a blank piece of parchment and they had already just screwed me, I would come back and say, hey, I earned an extra vote. I can use it or I can assign it to someone else. Look, it's a blank piece of paper. How valuable is that? That is of benefit. And then you could be like, oh, just kidding. I didn't have the extra vote. I just, you know, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But to then come with this idiotic handwritten thing. And then like, I'm wondering if he was required to use it for, quote, sabotage, which really makes matters even 10 times worse at that point. You know, like I'm gonna you know inside shop here. So I had a task where I had to do some sabotage of people's personal items when I was America's player on Big Brother, and I was told to squirt mustard on their belongings because it would not be ruining their belongings. It's something that you could just wash out. It wasn't like I had the option of burning their luggage on fire or something like that. So, but on the show, it's represented as a free will situation where I landed on the decision to put mustard on their belongings. I wonder if Jamal was told, no, you have to write something on this and you have to give it to someone and you have to sabotage them, in which case it's even more of a screw job than just the initial screwing of it all.
I believe Yeah, I believe he said in one of the interviews that we did with him that I think he was told he could specifically not make it into an extra vote or an idol.
Oh, well, yeah, that's lame, which is stupid, because if you really are going with the art of sabotage, that should count, right? Like, you're trying to pull one over on everybody with like, oh, yeah, it just happens to be an extra vote this time. But yeah,
his lesson is you can't actually help yourself. Not only did we screw you the first time, but you also can't use this to benefit yourself in any way. And we'll paint a bigger target on you because now you're going to have to make this obviously lying spectacle of yourself as well.
And I think I believe that what he told me was that Rob and Sandra actually convinced him to, or tried to convince him to, use the blank sheet of paper to write a letter. And like put the letter in someone's stuff. Maybe he could write up like an idol clue and put the idol clue in someone's bag. So like Abby Maria in RC style, somebody finds it and thinks that person has an idol. But he elected to go with the legacy advantage. So that would have been an interesting scenario as well. I guess the legacy advantage was better because it had more of a storyline than I really think if there was a letter being written, you know, as a result of Jamal's time to Island of the Idols, that would have been like the worst outcome possible because it would have had no bearing on the game if you just found like a random letter in somebody's bag.
What if he painted it to look like beef jerky and planted it in someone's bag?
That's a real problem. But like a letter to whom? From whom? Like, what does that even mean?
I have no
idea.
Yeah. Dear diary.
Maybe it would have been like a, or like a, Elaine. So like, great having you on Island of the Idols. Remember, you define your four hidden immunity idols back at camp that are good through the final three.
I see. Okay.
I don't know. Well, I'm not entirely sure, but maybe it'll end up coming back. Maybe we'll have an entire Survivor Pen Pals edition where it's just people writing letters back and forth to one another.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Dean was in complete shock of where he got the pen. Like, Dean was just like, where did he get the pen? Like, this is the greatest shock.
And also, like, the biggest question should have been, why did he give it to me? Me specifically, you know, like that part of it made no sense whatsoever. The whole thing was a mess.
Yeah, well, Jamal did say it was for his birthday, so.
Yeah, well, very thoughtful. Jamal is actually, and I'm sure I would not be surprised if everyone felt this way as well. He's someone I'd love to see play again. Yeah. He felt like a very multifaceted, interesting guy who had many sides of his personality. I think he obviously kept his head above water and really had a strong accounting of himself in the face of a couple of tough situations, handled himself well, you know, came away $15,000 richer as a result of it. But he's someone who I would like to see mix it up in the game. I loved the fact that at times he seemed villainous, at times he seemed heroic, at times he was doing the right thing, at times he was playing horribly. I like a flawed character, and that has some depth to him. He's an interesting guy, and that leads to interesting action. So I don't know that he would necessarily ever be a tremendous player, but whatever he did would be interesting, and I'd like to see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. And like, he's not just one note, and I think that in retrospect, like, really made him very interesting to watch. I would be so happy if he played again.
I would argue he might be one of the most interestingly edited characters of the season in a very interesting season. Like you said, Eric, what we were able to see from him in, what was it, 9 episodes, was just so three-dimensional. Like, it was really a warts and all approach to the point where people just really didn't know how to feel about him. I think the feeling is generally very benevolent on him looking back, considering what he was able to speak up for and how, you know, he was able to speak for it so well. But I really enjoyed watching him because he felt like the most like authentic player out there in terms of like, he went for things, he made mistakes, he had moments where he was warm. Like, I can assume everyone out there has good moments and bad on the island. And I feel like we saw that most of all from someone like Jamal.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's go ahead and put a cap on this. What do we say? 4 or 5 oofs for this one?
Maybe the full 5.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's a flavor. Golden
oofs. That's so perfect. All right. Well, those are the ones I mainly wanted to talk about. It was such an interesting, I mean, you know, like Eric, to your point about like, well, what are we going to do with Boss Rob and Sandra? And it's so funny because I almost feel like going into this, it was like, well, I don't get them off my television. You know, it's like a newbie season. I want to see the newbies play. And at the end, it was like, man, they could have done a better job, like utilizing them, being all critical of like, not enough Boss and Rob and Sandra.
One of the problems here is that they're not the players are not them, right? So not only did they not give them things to do or lessons, but it doesn't, just because the two of them can pull it off doesn't mean that these players can, which is why I think it would have been even funnier to see them try to implement actually good advice from them and fail. Because I've met Sandra several times, and for anyone who thinks that she sort of coasted or lucked into her first two wins, if you speak to Sandra for roughly 5 seconds, you'll understand that is not the case. Mm-hmm. She is whip smart. She tells you like it is, and you don't feel angry towards her when she does. She could tear you a new one, and you'd be like, hey, good point, Sandra. I appreciate your directness on that situation. She is just has a great temperament, a great mind for all of this, and is a genuinely likable person. And Rob, I am sure I have less personal experience with him, but is a very charming, charismatic, and his mind works on a different level. And it's like we didn't really get any of what is truly great about them. They were essentially like opening act comedians or something like that. It's very bizarre. And I actually think it would have been better, truthfully, if they just sat in the booth, it was revealed to everyone, and they said, hey, two of the legends are here giving play-by-play commentary on the events of Tribal. And that was the end of it. And then that was the full extent of it, because the lessons were without any practical meaning or anything.
Yeah, I mean, the best part, so the Boss and Rob's line about, like, what's the deal with chiropractors? Hilarious. Sandra making Vince army crawl. Like, those are the moments we remember. Like, no, you know, no one cares about anything else. So I love this, like, sort of sports commentary, play-by-play thing that we could have going on. Like, that I would really enjoy.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I think the other thing people were worried about besides Rob and Sandra coming into the game was like, oh, great, they're going to monopolize all the airtime from these new players. But looking at the post-merge, it is pretty ridiculous. They went to IOI, I think, 3 times outside of the finale out of, like, what, 8 episodes or so. That's a lot of restraint. And so I actually do give Survivor credit in that, unlike stuff like An Edge of Extinction or Redemption Island, for example, this twist did not take up such a large time suck that so much of us were concerned about. But I guess to your guys' point, there was some good stuff going on there that we actually might have wanted to see more of it to a certain extent. So it's weird that they were oddly conservative with this twist, which I think on paper or on parchment we would be happy about, but in this case it's something that we actually would want to see more of.
Mike, to the best of your knowledge, were any segments filmed and then cut, like certain reward challenges have been in the past? Is it possible that people actually did go at some point and they just didn't make the episodes, or to the best of your understanding, it was just like an in on the fly production decision that on those certain play periods, they simply would just not have the segment at all?
Yeah, so I guess I'm looking at the post-merge. So obviously, you know, we had the 2 merge episodes. The first one was the merge, so they weren't going to send somebody there. Second one, they did send somebody there with Jamal. The third one was the split tribal council, so I think it would make sense to not send anybody there because they wanted to have them strategize. Then Lauren got sent during Elizabeth's boot. Then I guess they didn't have anybody for the Karishma boot because of the loved ones challenge, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. It would have been interesting to have sent somebody there from the loved ones challenge, but I guess they decided not to.
And then, like, they had one at your loved one.
Yeah, but then they had one at the final 7. So I guess it was just a matter of, like, the way they structured the post-merge. They only had 2 reward challenges as well. And one of them, actually, they only had 1 standalone reward challenge at the post-merge, which I also thought was very interesting. So I guess it's just a matter of, like, the post-merge production being scheduled in a certain way where maybe they didn't need it as much, which you would think on paper would have then prevented, like, an advantage get in part 2, even though I guess we got it. Like, Dean had a nuclear bomb of advantages, but, like, didn't really set it off at the final 5. Mm-hmm. So I guess that was sort of like something that could have happened, but didn't, just because of Dean's choices.
Yeah, you just gathered all the things or whatever. What was it Tommy said? It was like you just collected things.
Yeah, it's like you had you have some souvenirs that you can put in your room at home.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, let's move on here and let's segue, I guess, from what happened during the season to what's going to happen after the season. And Eric, you mentioned Cameo beforehand. It is something that you and Rob Cesternino have become very knowledgeable of during your course of the summer slash winter slash insert season here of Stein. So I don't know if you guys know this, but Angelina Keeley has been doing some auctioning of Survivor 15-minute Skype calls with various alums to benefit her really great charity, Ready to Run, which supports young women looking to get into government and politics. But there have been bids going on throughout the past couple of weeks for a wide variety of Survivor players. So I figured what we would do for our final big game of the season is to play a cameo Skype call edition of The Price is Rourke. So here's what's going to happen. I'm going to give a Survivor player name. You are both going to give a guess, and the closest person to that guess of what the final bid, or I guess current bid, was wins that point. Now, this is a wide swath of people from all seasons, both old school and new school, and we'll see exactly how much these people are burning holes in their Survivor fans' wallets.
Okay, is this closest without going over?
We'll just say we'll just do closest.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's start with the most pertinent stuff. Let's talk about our winner here. Tommy, not his mommy, Sheehan. Eric, put in a bid here. How much do you think a 15-minute call with Tommy either went in for or is currently at its highest bid for?
I'm torn. On the one hand, this is for charity, so this should skew higher in the first place. Also, these things are deeply motivated by recency bias, and he just won is just upon us. On the other hand, this would be so boring. And what would you possibly ask him or speak about? I really can't imagine a true clamoring, even amongst the options from this season. We've seen what Dean is doing with his show worn underwear on eBay. I mean, this thing is blowing up. So I just can't see there being that much of a hankering for, damn, I want to talk to Tommy for 15 minutes. But he's a winner. Is for charity, and we don't yet have a price point of what these are looking like. I will go with $165.
Okay, and Liana?
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty close. We also have no idea. Like, did they? You know, what did they start at? Did they start at 100? I think because Tommy's the winner, I think that's definitely going to have some clout. I think I'm going to go a little bit higher. I think I'm going to say 200.
Okay, so Liana, you are closer, and you both way undershot the appeal of Tommy Sheehan. Tommy is currently going for $480 on eBay.
That's almost two Paul Rubens.
You could have Paul Rubens yell at every member of your family in the 3 minutes of time.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
Well, I guess he could teach you lessons, right?
Do you think people are calling in as like a homework hotline?
Yeah, it's my fourth grader has problems with his math homework. Can you teach him?
My guess is it's actually just like an extremely defensive 15 minutes, which is like, guys, I'm telling you, I did a lot out there. They just didn't show it for 15 minutes straight.
All right, well, let's go to you, Liana. Let's stay on this season. How much do you think Janet is going for?
Ooh, that's a good one. So, I mean, I have to imagine Janet is pretty high. I mean, she is worth $100,000. Thank you, see ya. And especially now knowing that Tommy for what, 480 something or whatever, I'm going to say Janet's at 500.
500. Okay, Eric.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll probably be wrong, but my gut instinct tells me that Janet would be more popular than Tommy. So I will go with 550.
All right, Liana is right again, but now we've overshot it. Janet at this moment is going for 350. Not too far away from Tommy, but still a little bit less. I think that, you know, that W next to his name might have added some clout in terms of the big bucks.
Now, Mike, I know.
Rather like talk to Tommy than Janet. Yeah, no offense to Tommy,
it's hard to believe as well. Now, Mike, I know that you already had the pleasure of speaking with them, but Liana, we have not. So I think we should be starting to look for some possibly value purchases to get in on these auctions, because now I'm seeing the numbers are out of whack. I mean, I have really no better way to spend $350 than to talk to Janet for 15 minutes. So I think we should consider our options as we're hearing the price points here.
Well, I think the thing is that this is like a good excuse for holiday shopping, right? Like, oh, I didn't, you know, I got you something that's worth more than any sort of, piece of jewelry. I got you 15 minutes with Janet.
15-minute call with Janet. We might be able to get some budget items. So, yeah, I like this idea.
Let's see what else is still on the market.
All right, well, let's go a bit old school here. How about two-time player Lex Vandenberg? Eric, how much do you think Lex is currently going for?
Can't be a lot. I mean, if Janet is now topping out at 350, well, he does have the Boston Rob tie-in. Ethan's coming back, but I don't think that makes him top of mind. Although, if you're bidding on this, you are a diehard fan. So he might, in many regards, have more clout than, you know, some other flimsier recent people. I don't feel great about this. I'm going to come in at $85.
Okay, Liana?
Yeah, that's really interesting because, you know, in 2019, you know, almost 2020, like, where do we think Lex would fall? I think I'm going to go. What did you say, Eric? 85?
I think so. That sounds about right.
OK, I'm going to go with 125.
Eric, you are $7 off. I was selling for $78.
Wow. All right. I mean, see, that's a good value. I'd be interested in hearing what he's up to. Not for nothing, the Lex, Kathy, Rob scene in All Stars might be my favorite scene in Survivor history, actually. So I have a soft spot for Lex. I'd like to ask him how he feels about that, 18 years after the fact or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Well, from one Rob to another, let's talk about our grand poobah himself, Rob Cesternino. Liana, how much do you think Rob went for during Angelina's auction?
Okay, so this is like very bizarre because I'm trying to figure out
how much you think Rob was sold for.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, you know what? I think Rob. Well, you can become even if you're like a top tier patron, don't you get like a call with him? So if this sold for more than that, then somebody invested poorly. You know what? I don't know. I've no concept. I'm just going to go ahead and say $500.
Okay, nice round number, Eric.
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, Rob is extremely accessible and basically will readily answer messages and emails, and he does the patron cast and things. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you can get FaceTime with Rob. That being said, Rob's got people, you know, so they're going to come out in droves for him, make sure he looks good, make sure that they're giving the charity. He's got loyal customers. So I'm going to say that Rob went for $625.
All right, Liana, you are closer. Rob is currently only going for $255. But time to man. You can bump up that price, people.
That's I think Paul Rubens is only what he that's $5.
Yeah, $5 more
than
if you like skip that footlong, people, and get a Paul Rubens cameo and or a Rob Cesternino cameo.
I was just being sycophant anyway. I was just kissing his ass. I knew that he went for nothing. I just
yeah, exactly. Be like, yeah, we gotta, I think we gotta he say went something for nice.
$5 billion,
exactly. Yeah. He's worth $100 billion in our hearts. We love you, Rob.
I'm still waiting for the Summer of Stein season 3 pickup. You know, I needed to keep it as good grade, so I was gonna go higher no matter what.
No. Here's what we need to do. Okay, we need to buy 2 Skype calls. If we could get Rob and then Paul Rubens and then put them on a Skype call together.
Oh, I love that.
And then we just get to watch. Yeah, I think that's really the way to go.
Yeah, definitely worth more than the value of like, what was it, like nearly $500 of them combined. Yeah. I would love that. All right, let's go to Eric here. Debbie Wanner, how much do you think people are paying for a phone call with Debbie?
$53.
Okay. All right, Liana.
Yeah, that's probably, I mean, unfortunately, I think Debbie is one of those characters that like rides the wave of the popularity. So because Debbie's not, you know, front and center, now you have Nora as sort of that similar archetype. I think I'm going to go with $40.
All right, Eric, once again, you're nearly right on the money. $56 for Debbie Wanner.
What?
I think, Liana, you nailed it on that one. It's like she's one of those characters that she was big in the moment, like a Brandon Hans. She was of a specific time and place, but she came and she went, unfortunately. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's go a bit more modern here. Liana, how much do you think people would pay to talk to Reem Daly, the standout of season 38?
I'm going to go with $30.
Yeah, this is very interesting because she is such a cultural iconic touchstone in our community.
Right.
But I do not think she holds that same esteem to the masses. However, it's a distinct possibility that our community are in fact the ones who are bidding on these things. So I'm going to go higher than 30, although I don't know how many options there are in totality. So I will say, like, if there's 50 auctions, then that's definitely going to bring hers down. But assuming she's like one of like 15 or 20, I will say she is going for $70.
$76, Eric. What, that's another Eric? Point for you.
That's amazing.
Well, I've been doing a lot of Hanukkah shopping recently.
Yeah, you're really cashing it on the deals. All right, let's move on here. Now, let's go to another luminary of RHAP. Eric, how much is Bryce Isaiah himself going for? The purple pants badass himself.
I'm going to go with 120. And I think that this is, although does not necessarily have the Survivor at large name clout as some of these other people, this is undoubtedly the best value buy here, going to be your most enjoyable 15 minutes. So actually, now that I'm saying this, I think I'm actually coming in a little too low. I will actually bump that to 140.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's interesting, because I think the similar logic applies to the Ream comment, Eric, that you made. That's like, oh, you know, this person, I think, holds a very, you know, soft spot in a lot of our hearts, in our community. But are we the ones that are bidding? So I don't think I'm necessarily as high as Eric on this one. I think I'm going to go with just around $100.
Okay, so Eric, you originally guessed 120. And you should have stayed there. $112.50 for Bryce. Oof. It was close, but Liana gets the point.
Nice.
It's a good value buy. That'll be an enjoyable 15 minutes for sure. One of the differences, and trust me, I love Reem. I'd be delighted to speak with her. But I believe that a lot of the entertainment was sort of about Reem, whereas Bryce himself is the entertainment. You
That's
know,
a so great I think point.
That the
yeah.
conversation will be a little bit livelier with Bryce.
Well, mm-hmm. So to that point, actually, I want to bring the first and only duo of this group mm-hmm. up for auction here. So from Angelina's OG season, Gabby Pascuzzi and Allison Raybould are doing a Skype call together. Liana, what do you think their price point is?
Huh, all right, so we got a twofer here. Yikes, is it bad if I give it a low amount? Like, I'm just trying to think, like, who would be clamoring of, like, yes, these two together, like, perfect.
I think that
Thank
was their
you.
Strategy of why they wanted the good thing. I mean, because it's like, could you spare it? You couldn't do 15. It takes the same 15 right. minutes, and they could have done two separate calls for charity. So why did they do this together? Is it that they recognized that they were going to be of a lesser value? Is it just laziness? Do they think it would be somehow entertaining or more desirable? I'm not sure what the headspace is.
Yeah, they just really hate charity. Okay, I'm gonna go, I have no idea, I'm gonna go $30.
$30? Yeah, okay. I mean,
it doesn't feel great. This feels possibly sub Debbie, but they are more recent and they also have more attachment to Angelina, so I'll just go in at a flat $50.
Okay, this one goes to Eric, $180.50 for Gabby and Allison. So they got some
good
fans out there.
Wow, just imagine what Jack and Elizabeth could have gone for as a unit.
As long as they don't write that they're twins on there.
Yeah, as long as they don't switch hairs and realize they're the same person who are now in love.
Yeah, exactly. The Skype is just going to be them braiding each other's hair while they talk to you.
Well, this is a shocking turn of events. $180, good for them.
Yeah.
Well, let's stick on the
That might tell us, just as an aside, I think this informs us. I think that we'll be seeing Gabby again on a future season. I think she has maintained her popularity.
What, Dr. Allison wasn't the one that you think?
I don't. Really,
yeah, who's real? So. Who's the breadwinner of the two?
I would have liked to maybe have a Dr. Allison and Dr. Mike and Dr. Peter Bagginstos trio, perhaps. Was he a doctor? I may have just.
Yeah, he was a doctor.
Know. Okay, good.
All right, well, let's stay on the David versus Goliath train. Eric, Dan Rangering, Hot Cop Dan.
Yes.
How much do you think he went for?
tricky because, you know, this man is an internet sensation and a modern day sex symbol for sure. That being said, conversationalist, I'm not sure. And also not really that closely associated with Survivor. But I am now wondering if there's an uptick that, you know, Angelina's power buyers perhaps might only be familiar with her season. That is now what I'm wondering, if that's why there was such an uptick for the last pairing, and that as a charitable donation, they're like, oh yeah, I know her because I supported Angelina. So I'm going to say this is going to be higher than expected as well. And I will go with 125.
Hey, Liana.
Okay. Interesting. So first of all, Dan Ringring is just such a fascinating human being to me. Like, I don't get him and his F fake friends t-shirt. Like, nothing of it makes sense. So I'm trying to think, like, what would be, of course, the Dan value for the Skype call? Like, what would you even talk about with Dan? I have no idea what I would talk about with him.
I would superheroes. Just
like, take your shirt off for 15 minutes, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
I wonder how lascivious these calls can get. They are for a good cause, but
are there any stipulations, right, in the message?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I want a cam boy. Okay, so I think I just don't know how, like, while I am fascinating, I don't know how relevant. I think I'm going to go with $90.
Okay. Ooh, very close, but this one goes to Liana. $102.50 for Dan wow. Ringring.
Is it still up for auction, asking for a friend?
Perhaps. We'll have to see what types of requests you're allowed to make, though. I'm not sure what the stipulations are. All right, let's start looking ahead. Season 40 cast member and winner of Survivor Ko Rong, Michelle Fitzgerald. Liana.
Ooh, Michelle. Now, she's a winner. And what we learned from Tommy is that the winners are valued pretty high. So, and I think Michelle has also, like, gained a lot of popularity sort of in response to the whole, like, Aubrey versus Michelle thing. So I think I'm going to go with $400.
Okay, Eric?
There's no way that's correct. So I'm just trying to decide if I should go with like 20 or like 200 so I will. Yeah, I'll go with 200.
OK, well, Liana was very right around the corner, much like Tommy went for 480. Michelle went for 450.
Holy cabooses.
Wow.
Oh, my God. It was so correct. And I was so wrong. So very wrong. Wow, that is
so wrong.
this is very interesting. So this is, hey, I didn't know she was such a contender moving forward.
Good,
wow.
Good for her.
All right.
Yeah. I'd be fascinated to see if there was an Aubrey one, what it went for at this point.
Yeah, that's very true. Just keep that debate alive. Though I think after Edge of Extinction, I don't exactly know. Maybe but I think the price would have fallen in comparison to like 2016, you know.
I also don't think that Aubrey is volunteering phone calls with people anymore.
All right, let's move on here. Eric, fellow winner and one right after Michelle, also will be appearing next season. Adam Klein, how much do you think Adam Klein's going for?
Well, now we know the winners are hot commodities, and he's a very affable guy. I personally, although could be wrong, would think that he would be entertaining to speak to for 15 minutes. So I'm going to go if those are what the previous winners went, I'm going to say he's going in a little higher. He does public speaking engagements. I'm going to say 540 for Adam.
Okay,
yeah. I think that's probably some solid logic. I think I'm going to go, you know, 480, 450. So I think I'm going to go with 475.
All right. It's going to Liana here. Surprisingly for a winner, Adam Klein's going for 202.50.
Whoa.
Made himself a little too accessible. Huh?
That's right.
All right. So right now the score is Liana has 7 and Eric has 4. I'm going to bring up one final thing. And you mentioned it before, Eric. Dean is selling his underwear. His underwear from the show. Here's how it's going to work. We're going to do this Final Jeopardy style. So I want you guys, again, Liana, you have 7 points. Eric, you have 4. I want you to give me the price point and how many points you are willing to put up. so that Eric might have a fighting chance here, depending on who gets the point here. But basically, we're going to see how much you want to wager for the wagering of Dean's underwear.
Ooh, okay. And so I'd heard that it got taken. Is it still up?
It's still up.
Taken down?
His underwear is down, but it's still up.
Yeah.
Yeesh.
Yikes.
Yeah. I mean, well, obviously, this is going to be in Liana's hands. I obviously have to go all in here. I will be betting all 4 of my points. I learned as a young lad back in the early 90s that I did not bet enough crime bucks on Carmen Sandiego, and it's been haunting me ever since. And God forbid I get this right, but still come up short. So I'm going to have to push all in on this one.
Okay, so just like Boston Rob and Sandra taught Elaine, I'm going to have the courage to be daring.
Can we make a t-shirt? Like, we'll all pull our interests and put out an inspirational t-shirt that has that message in it and have the courage to be daring.
The courage to be daring. I like have the strength to be strong, I think is my personal favorite of that of those. But yeah, I'm going to go all in too. Let's see what happens.
Okay, all right. So Liana, we'll start with you. How much do you think at this moment, there's still 5 days and 3 hours left at the time of recording this, but how much do you think people are paying for a bit of DK Chillin's boxer briefs?
Okay, so I did see this, I guess, 2 days ago, maybe. And it started out, I know, at like $450. So, which is insane to me.
Which is right now the going rate for Michelle Fitzgerald.
Right, exactly. Dean's underwear, 15 minutes with Michelle.
Yeah, but it's 15 minutes and it's over, right? You have the right. Underwear forever.
The underwear lasts forever.
Or until it disintegrates. Yeah.
So I know that it's more than that. So I'm trying to think of like how much more do we think it's worth? I'm going to go with $650.
Okay. Eric, your final guess for Dean Kowalski's underwear.
Let me just say, this is really, truly disgusting and bizarre. And there is no reason whatsoever, no matter how large a fan of this man you are, that you should want this for any reason that I can speak of on this podcast. It is very unnerving to me. So whoever you are, shame on you. But I will say, that being said, there are a lot of creeps out there, and DK Chillin, desirable man. So I'm gonna go in at $818.
Okay, so it's going to go by a tight margin to Liana. It was $710 for Dean Kowalski's game worn underwear from Survivor Season 39, Island of the Idols.
Ah, man, is that a smart choice?
That's nearly 3 Paul Rubens.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You would also think it just in light of just sort of the overarching, cloud over the season. Is this really the time to be doing these creepy things, DK Chillin? Just keep your underwear to yourself. I mean, yeah, seriously,
it's actually very insensitive of Dean to be selling his used underwear in this time.
The interesting thing is also Dean looks like Dean sold basically all of his clothes. The underwear is obviously the highest price point, but it looks like he sold his shirt, his pants, his coat, and indeed the infamous Nikes that he was able to get back are now going for $450.
Did he wash them? Or I know they are show worn, but are they in used as left the island condition, or did he refurbish them a little bit? Because that could make it even worse, honestly. I'm very unsettled by this.
Oh, it's so weird.
I will say it's enterprising of him. And I did the same after I was on Big Brother. I actually sold 4 t-shirts, I think, for a total of $1,000 at the time. And then I just went online and rebought them for $60. So joke was on the buyers.
Yeah, we don't know how many pairs of leopard underwear that Dean has in his closet. Like, he could just very easily just be skimming one off the pack.
Right. That could have been a Hanes His Way 3-pack. Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. Well, congratulations, Leanna. Congratulations to everybody for, giving money to a very good cause. I don't believe Dean's was for ready to run. But you know
cause.
What? You're putting money in his pockets where apparently he's going commando because he sold his underwear. So I guess it's a good cause in that regard.
Man, okay, so here's what I want. I want Dean to sell all his clothing and then we'll do the Skype call.
Skype, yeah. Maybe it's all part of a master plan to earn a ton for charity from Dean.
Right.
It's very true. So I guess we'll see what the second step of his master plan is. All right, let's move on to our final question of the week for this season. In honor of Dean and the $450 Nikes, where is the best place at camp to hide someone else's stuff? Jacob Sager-Weinstein had an interesting idea, and maybe a different way we could have brought Island of the Idols into this season. He said he would hide people's stuff on the Island of the Idols just to watch Rob and Sandra try to tie it into a Survivor lesson. One of the most important skills on Survivor is fitting in. If you can fit your foot in your shoe, if you can fit this foot into your shoe, you'll win an advantage. So I like this sort of like Cinderella story aspect of it.
Yeah, I also like this concept of like Island of the Idols. It's like Island of the Junk, you know?
Yeah, like the lost and found.
Just store it on the Island of the Idols.
Yeah, do you think they would like hang it off of the shelter or something, or like from Boston Rob's nose?
Yeah, that's what they've collected.
I mean, you have to think the hair idol was probably the best actual answer to this. And we saw it on this season. It was ingenious. That was as fun. I mean, that was fun. That was innovative. I was a big fan of that as a hiding spot.
So you can
hide someone's shoes in your hair as well, for example.
Yeah, you know, work if
anything you steal the machete in your hair. Whatever, that's where I was going.
Yeah, do you think that's where Nora was going to put all those machetes when she threatened Lauren? Like, hey, I can incapacitate you. I can steal all the machetes right now.
Yeah, time.
I mean, if they knew what they were worth, she could have gone for the underwear instead of the shoes, you know?
Exactly. Auction that off after.
Logan says, I would hide stuff up high in a tree, like how campers put their food in trees away from bears.
It's pretty much the same thing.
I think by the end of it, you're so hangry that you act like a bear. So I can imagine like they can't necessarily get up the tree. Eric, you just brought this up. Ty Snar says, if I were to hide an opponent's things at camp, I would first grow my hair out prior to the show, then much like Kelly, inexplicably hide items in my hair that seem as though should fall out or be seen, but remain there. I would hope to get cast around season 60, where my hair would be long enough to both hold smaller items like someone else's socks or glasses, but likewise larger items. This may include a rival's shoes or the tribe's supply of rice if I were on the outs.
I have an idea. What if you did it in your mouth and then you wouldn't be able to speak either? So therefore, you couldn't do anything wrong or upset anyone. You would just be there and not bother anybody. And vis-a-vis, you'll make it to the end. So I think that this could kill two birds with one stone, hiding items as well as helping not, disrupt the flow of the game.
I'm excited to see what the editors try to put together for the contestant that never spoke throughout the season is the winner. Like, what does the winner narrative
bulging
look like?
Out in their cheeks?
Yeah.
Well, we didn't hear from him the entire season because his mouth was full of secrets. But now Mark is here to talk about his time on Survivor.
Yeah.
Like, I actually had the shoes all along. He spits them out.
Like Dean. He's like, all right, anything you could do, I could do better. I put shoes in my mouth. All right, Jonathan Troyer says, many articles of clothing have elastic bands in them, so you could just easily shoot them up into the trees. Most people don't look up when searching for clothes, and then there's the puzzle in getting them down. So, sort of going through again up in a tree aspect, but this time you're almost slingshotting them in there.
Well, I mean, depending on how much elastic Dean's underwear still has, like, that could work.
I just like this idea of, like, shooting people's belongings into a tree, so that by the end of it, like, oh, look up, that's where you'll find all your stuff.
Sounds like a riddle.
Why hide them at all, really? I mean, I think that we've seen in the earlier days, I mean, you can just throw them in the water or burn them, right? Isn't that more effective than hiding them? Why do they need them back?
Sure, it's less work.
Parker Schimler says, if they bring back the clues to hidden idols from the days of Exile Island, I would just hide people's stuffs in the spots from the idols and let them get clues to find their stuff. Well, that would be interesting. So, like, you already have the clues. I would say, like, re-hide the clues and then put their shoes, like, in the hole where you found the idol. So that way, they almost have to go on their own scavenger hunt.
No, that's what Dean should have done. He should have taken his underwear and then that message, the little handwritten note that Boston Rob and Sandra left, that was about, like, one more test and you passed, and hide those things together. So then if Tommy, for some reason, does figure it out, it's like, what? What test did I win?
And I know that segment was pretty lengthy to start out the episode, but I know it takes up more time. I personally enjoy that more than just people reaching into tree trunks and finding idols, just because it was such a random, it's a mad, mad, mad world, wild goose chase of like, find the miscolored plank, then find where the H is. And the image of Dean swinging was fun. So
That was way more fun. I thought. That was a throwback in a good way. Now it's right. Like, hey, someone played Night of Last Night. I'm gonna go look in every tree. No clues. No fun. This had some like tongue in cheek sort of like irreverence to it. This was. I thought it was really enjoyable. And them sort of just solving it and him waiting on the swing and seeing the symbols. I wish they did stuff like this all the time. And I think I would be totally cool with it if nobody figured it out or nobody knew it was a thing. But if someone happened to be bored one day and stumbled upon this scavenger hunt, I think that was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely cosign. It was so, so, so fun. And like, you know, when the editors try to make like, oh, will they find the idol or won't they find the idol? That sort of anticipation and that nervousness that I just felt so much more through going through this type of experience with all of the different clues and everything. Like if we could bring something back, this, I loved this.
Yeah. And especially like even starting out, I mean, good on Tommy for noticing that the first clue was essentially like one of these things doesn't belong, where he was looking at the new buffs and he noticed, oh yeah, that thing's a machete. And it's it was such an interesting connector to the point where the idol that Dean found was the idol that was pictured on the buff that was missing. So it was like had this really crazy, interesting arc to it.
Yeah.
Let's see. And finally, Dan Sinensky, which will connect to next season, says hide people stuff in a supply shack, but he put certain parentheses in where if you took them away, it says hide people stuff in a spy shack, which I would not be surprised if we saw in some capacity next season.
Oh my gosh. I still can't believe that this is actually happening. Like seeing the promo for season 40 was just, I got from this such a bad season of Survivor, like I got immediately re-excited, and all it took was like a 30-second promo of showing previous winners. Like I am a simple woman, simple pleasures.
No, this is incredible, guys. I mean, to see such stellar players that should have been back so long ago, like Denise and Kim and Yule, to see super likable guys like an Adam or an Ethan. I mean, Ethan is playing Survivor again. It's a miracle. And I'm not, this is not hyperbolic. I'm not even trying to be funny. This as a lifelong fan means so much to me. It's a miracle that Ethan is alive, let alone playing Survivor. The fact that this man is well enough to go out and do this again is absolutely fantastic. Incredible. It is going to be amazing. There are no bad weeks. There's you know what? There's not even the game changers of it all. There's no way that this can go awry for me, right? This is right. No matter what, there are so many good people, and to see how they shake out is going to be fascinating and entertaining and amazing. I'm so, so, so excited. That being said, definitely more excited about some than others. And I think that there were some missteps along the way. And I'm sure that everyone feels that way. But in totality, amazing. This is so freaking cool.
I'm really excited just by the unprecedentedness of it all, in that, like you said, we've had returning player seasons before, but this is the first time that everyone coming to the table has won at least once before, and they've won for good reason. And I think that, you know, we're going to see what happens when you have these positive virtues in gameplay butt up against each other. I think for people who were not necessarily seeing an amazing gameplay in Survivor Island of the Idols, I think you're really going to see some very intense four-dimensional gameplay in Survivor Winners at War, especially given the Edge of Extinction and given the fire tokens. Like now there are new things to play with. And yes, they're going to be thinking on the fly, but it'll be very interesting to see how that affects everything. I'm very excited to just watch these people interact with each other. As like I mentioned,
I was just gonna say, like Steven said on the know-it-alls, there's going to be 19 losers, which means this is super high stakes for them. They're not coming out there for the fun of it, right? So they are going to be minute one head in this game. Also, whereas you had, say, like, you know, Tony and Sandra, they're going after each other on Game Changers. The legends would have to be out of their minds to not realize that they're all going to lose if they don't align. So there's the possibility we could see the likes of Rob and Sandra and Tony and Parvati all in an alliance together against the recent winners against the lesser name winners. If I'm this caliber of player and I'm going out of there, I'm looking at a Denise, a Sophie, a Natalie, for the very reasons you guys liked their candidacy in your draft podcast. But you could look at them right away and say, hey, if we don't get them out, they're going to win because right. Amber won a season like this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Parvati really wasn't any great shakes when she first won, you know, at least from the outer perception. And Sarah certainly wasn't, right? Who wins these seasons? If I'm the big names, I am sticking together because it's us or them, you know? So I think that that would be a fascinating dynamic that we can look at. And I give them all credit for going out there. I got to say, and, you know, this is probably going to get an eye roll from people, but I am really embarrassed for Cochran for not agreeing to play. I really am. your ego has to be so out of control, unchecked. There have been people with much more esteemed and established jobs who have taken the time to play. He loves this game and he is simply not going because he doesn't want to lose. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Just leave your life for 6 weeks and take it on the chin like 19 other people are doing. That's a disappointment for me. And I will say also, just from a casting standpoint, I know that production does not necessarily love him. I would have liked to see Mike Holloway in there rather than potentially maybe Ben, something along those lines. He in real life is a really, really likable, good natured guy. He's also a bit of a bull in a china shop. And he's a create havoc type of guy. I understand they don't love his season. I understand he didn't play the most interesting game, but I think that part of what would be great about this season and will be great is seeing people come at it from different skills and different styles.
Right.
For me, he's a little bit of an oversight, but I get it. There's only so many slots to go around. So it's not mm-hmm. like I'm going to stay awake at night crying because Mike Holloway isn't playing. But, you know, I think there could have been subtle casting changes that would have put it extra over the top for me, but this is an A++. So this is not a complaint. I'm just like nerding out in deep dive of it all, you know?
Well, so yeah. as Eric mentioned, I know that, you know, when we spoke with Rob, we wanted to sort of let season 39 rest / have us sort of all take a collective breath from Survivor. You know, it's been a very interesting year of Survivor across the board before we get into 2020 and season 40 of it all. But as Eric mentioned, if you are looking to get into some season 40 stuff ASAP, myself, Liana, Ali Lasher, and Akiva Winokur did a draft back in June earlier this year, back when there was a thought about this season and maybe a cast of 20 winners. This was without knowledge of Edge of Extinction or Fire Tokens or the $2 million prize or anything like that. We just looked at the 20 people on paper, talked through them, did a draft. It's a very fun time capsule of not only that season, but also of the very bad predictions we made about what the world would look like at the end of 2019 or beginning of 2020. But I encourage you guys, if you're looking to get into some season 40 content ASAP, look to that. That's 3 hours that'll hopefully get you through the rest of the year before Rob comes back in 2020 to really dive deep in these people.
Not mm-hmm. to spoil the one sentence of the podcast, but Mike, Men in Black did not really do that well at the box office.
I thought it was unsinkable.
Oh man, yeah, the predictions, real shining light on our abilities. Yeah, that podcast was so much fun, so definitely check that out if you're interested. Yeah.
What are you guys most excited to see? Forget about winning, and I know we're going to cover this you know, every which way till Sunday, but who are you personally just like, I cannot wait to see them out there playing this game?
Yule.
Like, I think for me, like, the combo of Yule, Danny, and Ethan, because those are three people that I would never have thought in my wildest dreams would either want to come back or would be brought back. And I think that just to see those three people, I mean, it's actually, you know, connecting back to Tommy. And I think Robbie made this comparison to Ethan during the podcast that we did of, like, we just saw someone win in a very new school game who benefited purely on relationships and social dynamics. And so I wonder, in a very new school game with all the stuff that's coming next season, are they going to change their games? Or are those three people going to stick to the things that made them winners in the first place? And, you know, there's been a lot of time since, especially with Ethan, a lot has happened in their lives. How much does that shape the changing way that they approach the game or the way they are as people? That's what I'm most intrigued in seeing.
I can't wait. I'm just so excited. It's just
fascinating.
Yes, it is like a thing of fan fiction. You know, Mike, like hearing you talk about it, like, what is Ethan going to do when he plays Survivor again? Like, I'm sorry, what did you just say? I'm just really excited. I think for me, like Yule is the person who falls into that category of I never expected I would ever see on my television ever again. Not only do I get to see him, but I got to get to see him interact with players like Kim Spradlin and Danny Burrow. You know, it's like it's really something amazing. And I'm so excited.
Yeah, I've met a good portion of these players and it's really fascinating, guys. I mean, because they are such targets and it's just completely undeniable. You meet a Wendell and you get in 5 seconds like, oh man, this guy's charismatic. He's smart. Right. He's likable. It's so clear. But as the point is, you can't knock out those targets right away because everyone is right. That level of target, yes. Right? So what do? The people you can trust versus the people you can't trust, the people who are endgame threats, the people who are idle threats. Where do you even begin to sort this all out if you're playing this game? And you know, there is a layer of desperation for these people. Like, please don't let it be me. I just want to have a positive accounting for themselves. There are players coming in with a chip on their shoulder who feel like they're going to be undervalued. There's people who had a bad last showing or are coming off an amazing showing and they know full well that it can't get any better than that. It's just really going to be a fascinating dynamic, and it'll be interesting to see if is everyone respected out there, or are you going to have some of your bigger name players looking down upon some of the more recent or lesser name players? It's going to be really great to see. And the only thing I'll say is you just hope that some of these people that we're dying to see find a way to make it happen and make it through, and that the gameplay lives up to the hype, which I think it will. I think
it will. And I'm going to put in a bold prediction right now, sight unseen. Whoever comes back from the Edge of Extinction is not going to win this season. And I say that because the last season that they watched before going out was Edge of Extinction. And I think seeing the reception behind Chris, granted, it's going to be a bit of a different story where even if it's someone who got voted out in episode 3 and came back, we still know who they are. But I feel like they are going, and we talked about this in the podcast as well, incidentally enough, of like, if you're going to crown a winner of the winners, I think they're going to want to go for somebody who was not voted out and had to win their way back in.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. Totally disrespectful to the game. And I actually think from your podcast, not to spoil the content, but I am in the camp that there are certain people that are going to have a very hard time winning because the other winners in totality will not be on board with them being Survivor's greatest winner. I don't think that there are certain people that just like they cannot sleep at night, whether it's fair or not, or whether it's justified or not. But I think that that is going to be an uphill battle for some of these people, no matter how well they play. So I think that's interesting. I also think it's really interesting that Jeremy and Sarah already won seasons like this. Does that give them an advantage or a disadvantage? You know, there's just so many subplots. It's going to be an amazing ride.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I'm just so excited.
I just wanted to make sure that Liana let out her exhaling before we ended up catching our breath here.
Yeah, really. Oh, my God. Guys, I'm just lost for words at how amazing this truly is. And just thinking about exactly all those dynamics, like the preconceived notions of like, what is this jury going to value? Because this is truly the winner of the winners, the winners at war. And I just think 2020 is going to be a great year.
Yeah, and it's crazy because we're going to be at a loss for words on 2019 because we're about to finish up, Liana, our final B&B of 2019. And, you know, I will say season 39, to echo what Rob said beforehand, from all of our perspectives, was not the easiest season to cover. I feel like especially so for our podcast in terms of trying to figure out, okay, in some of its darkest moments, do we try to find the lightness in Survivor and how do we do that? And do we worry about, you know, just like overriding people's emotions and doing that. And so I know I talked about this with Rob, but I really do hope all of you out there who are able to listen all season long, I hope we were able to provide some levity, because as we brought up, you know, there was a dark cloud over this season, but I think there were some peaks of sunshine and some moments that we can enjoy, especially looking back. And Liana, I always have fun with you on this. This was a trying time as a Survivor viewer and a Survivor podcaster, but I think we had a lot of fun this season, no matter what we were talking about. And I hope everyone else out there did as well.
Yeah, I mean, Mike, honestly, I couldn't have asked for a better partner to go through all of this with, because it was like, you know, the merge episode happened and the only thing I could think was like, how am I supposed to come up with a game? Like, this is not fun. This is not funny. Like, what are we supposed to do? And I think, you know, it's important to still discuss, you know, what happened and everything that went down. But at the same time, you know, you still have to be able to find joy in things. And we squeezed this for all that it was worth. So I'm just excited and happy to move. Fun.
And yeah, and absolutely. As a listener, you guys really navigated it really well. It is a welcome departure from some of the more heavy things. And that's why RHAP as a machine works so well in totality, because you guys provided it all. Right. So it was great. Anyone that needed anything from the situation, it was available within the network of podcasts. And you guys did a great job keeping things light and where it's at. You still discussed it, you covered it, and then you got back to what you do here. And it was a job well done. And so you guys, thanks so much for bringing some of those laughs and smiles throughout what was definitely an interesting ride. That's for sure.
Thank you, Eric.
The Dean $710 underwear of the podcast sphere of like, okay, it's elastic and comfortable and colorful,
healthy,
it's zesty, it's iconic, it's different. But Eric, thank you so much for your kind words.
It might be zesty, possibly.
Yeah, that's true. Really appreciate that. So I'll go around the horn here. So Eric, if people want to keep up with any social media shenanigans you have going on or any future podcasts that might be down the line, how can people follow you?
Well, I am at Eric Stein Tweets on Twitter. And lately I have been chronicling my battle against a beeping noise in my apartment. And,
how's that going?
Spoiler, the beeping one.
Oh, no.
I always lose.
Oh, no.
It was about as good of a ride as season 39. But after it resolved itself after about, 56 hours or so.
No just problem. Like the beeping noise just died and you're still not sure what it was from.
I think it just like literally just ended. Yeah, it just could beep no more. But that's not because I resolved it or figured it out or anything. And it was still quite irritating for the rest of the time. So if you want interesting factoids like that, that's where you can find me.
Very captivating stories. So you can find me on social media at Liana Boris. Like Mike mentioned, we did the draft podcast for season 40. And then Puya Zanvakili and myself wrapped up the season finale of The Masked Singer season 2. So that was a really wild ride and a lot of fun. So definitely check that out on Reality TV or Hapups or in our very own Masked Singer podcast feed.
And we are T minus what, like 5 weeks from the Masked Singer coming back after the Super Bowl?
I know. Yeah, we talked a little bit about what is upcoming for season 3. There are like I think 4 or 5 new costumes.
Yeah, like Mrs. Monster.
Banana. Yeah, so there's the female monster, which you can tell she's a woman because she has eyelashes. Because, you know, and there's a banana, just very bizarre. There's some like gangster gecko looking guy. Yeah,
and there's a mouse, I think.
It's like a stoned llama. It's very odd, very odd. And that will be premiering after the Super Bowl. So look out for that. It's going to be fun.
You can always follow me at a Mike Bloom type. You can check out all the interviews that I did with the final 5 on the red carpet. I really enjoy getting to talk with these people again after connecting them out in Fiji and getting to see them again at the after party. We give a lot of insights as to the end game, the reception behind that final tribal council, etc. So check that all out at parade.com. Josh Wiggler and I are still moving through Down the Hatch, our Lost retrospective. Josh is going away, but luckily we have many, many, many shows booked. We just did a Deus Ex Machina and we get into the big Do No Harm episode where a certain character dies, but I will not spoil that. But we really had a great time doing that. When I was over in LA, Rob and I alluded to this. We did a Happy Holidays brand steal where things are just a little different. You'll find out in due time, but we have plenty of brand steel silliness to end your year on. And once we come back, I'll be doing Picard coverage with Jessica Lease over on Post Show Recaps as well. So I think we're asking what off season, because the off season doesn't really exist with what Liana and I are doing. We're also, I think, only like 7 weeks or so away from Survivor Winners at War. Leon and I will definitely come back and do some sort of preseason coverage in that capacity. And I would say stay tuned to Survivor podcasts in general, because like I mentioned, when Rob comes back in 2020, I'm sure he'll be hitting the ground running when it comes to covering what will surely be a very interesting season of Survivor. That's going to do it for the B&B. Thank you for people who have listened and submitted suggestions all season long. In fact, the Price's work for the Angelina cameos was brought up by Sam Moore and Josh Green. We're really appreciative of everyone who suggested game to us all season long. Like Liana said, more so this season than others, there were weeks when we were just flat out stumped as to what games to come up with based on what we saw, and we were able to find some really fun ways to talk about Survivor in general, and I cannot wait to keep doing that into next year. If you have stuff in the off season that you want to suggest to us, rhapbnb@gmail.com. We are always listening. Thank you so much to our guests over the course of this season, between Nicole Cesternino, Haley Strong, Antonio Mazzaro, Scott Chernoff, Jenny Autumn, Jessica Leese, Mary Holland, Jess McKenna, Matt Hoffman, Amon Adwin, Mary Kwiatkowski, Puya Zimekeli, and of course, present company Eric Stein, for being with us all season long. And thank you again for being with us all season long. We'll be back with the B&B in a couple of months to talk about Survivor Winners at War. I cannot believe this is finally happening. Let us know your thoughts about season 39. Thank you for making 2019 such a special year for the B&B. Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes, Paul Osselson, our head writer, Wolf from America for our theme song and the Oof Drops. We cannot do it without you. For happy holidays to everybody. We will see you next year for Survivor 40. But for now, we'll check you out at your next stay.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name.